3, 2, 1, go.
All right. I think we're live, right?
Yeah.
Good. Okay. Welcome, Lee Wilbur.
Good to be here.
Thank you for being on my show. So there's something I wanted to talk to you about. I'm a little worried that maybe you're mad at me. So a little while ago, I was Lee has been trying to get me to be a consultant for years. And I actually went with him, and I worked with him for a company, or I went to interview to work for a company, and ended up not doing any actual work for them. So that's like your bread and butter. You are a really nice guy, and you totally stuck up for me and tried to get me a revenue flow. And I walked in there like I was freaking Jack Sparrow. And I'm like, hi there, mateys, I'm here to do some Linux work. And I took my shoes off, and I'm leaning back, and I'm like, hey, how's it going? And just took some casual notes, and then I asked a bunch of questions and wasted everyone's time. And I'm sorry about that, because I was kind of like trying to figure out where I was as a consultant.
That was nothing to worry about. It ended up inspiring me to find an alternate solution.
Really?
Yes.
What was your alternate solution?
To do a bunch of weird things with a VB program. That
the program?
Yes.
Awesome.
That
you've been teaching yourself to code, right?
I've been coding in Visual Basic.
I'm not going to audit it, man. Just, you know.
For like 20 plus years.
Oh, okay.
The thing is,
what are you learning?
I didn't necessarily want to call myself a programmer until probably about a year and a half ago.
Oh, okay.
When reviewing somebody else's code, I suddenly realized what I was doing wrong the entire time.
Ah. So is that like how you know you're a programmer, when you can look at someone else's code and go, no. No, I don't think so. Is that it? Is that the magic moment?
Well, not ever having professionally programmed before this, or having really professional education in programming, I don't know.
Is it like, are you doing it for a need, or are you doing it in reaction to the market?
No, the client that I'm working for has a program that was written at least 10 years ago.
Right.
And they haven't had updates to it for probably 5 to 8 years before I got there.
Right.
And they have so many needs to it, to change it, to adapt to their business now, that I just started playing with it and realized, hey, I can do this.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it seems like a business that doesn't have some kind of programmer on staff is kind of smoked at this point, especially if they're in information technology, which this company is.
Well, so, they're not
an IT company. They're doing information now.
They're heavily dependent on their database and the program they use to access it.
Right. So you see what I just did there, how we talked about it, euphemisms? So a lot of, you nailed it. So a lot of, I've had a couple other people on, and I haven't had the opportunity to talk about a real world experience and guide it with euphemism. So that was perfect, man. You nailed it. You sent me notes. I just wanted to say, so if you don't know who Lee Wilbur is, let me introduce him. He is was a Microsoft MVP for years. He's got a prevalent voice on Xbox Exchange. He is the Windows guy. When he walks into our Linux group, and he's the go-to guy for Windows, and it's not just that. Actually, I know a lot of geeks, and obviously, so, and you are the best one. When anybody gets stuck, my answer is go to Lee, and it never fails. Because if you don't know the answer, you know who to go to, so. You're not going to get a better endorsement from me than that.
Yeah, that's probably too much, but okay.
What? If anyone asks if you're a god, you say yes.
Fair point.
All right. So, let's see. So we had a couple of points I wanted to make. So one of the things I wanted to say is, so some of the notes I'm reading here are actually the brainchild of Lee, who came up with his own questions and ideas and things he wanted to talk about. He actually gave me a much bigger list. I had to narrow it down. So Lee's been involved with ICON before, and he did the SciTech programming for years, and he came up with these amazing topics. And it's not just that. You know, sometimes you come up with really great ideas for, like, any kind of abstract concept to anchor people into a conversation. And you are what that really is marketing. You're a marketing whiz and you don't even know it. So I'm going to out you as a marketing whiz and say that these are great questions. Thanks so much. Is there anything in the list that you particularly wanted to talk about?
I don't know.
All right, we'll find it. Whatever.
I gave you a list of a whole bunch of things that, as far as I'm concerned, are interesting to talk about.
Yeah.
Possibly fun, possibly serious.
Well, I was just saying to you off camera that, I mean, this could take, like, years to get to the point where we could do 10 shows, no problem, and just to cover all this stuff thoroughly. So, and
let's start with this one.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, let's start with this one. So, out of the future into the now. So, so the first thing I wanted to talk about was something you brought up with politics, which is amazingly timely, and I can't believe this happened right after I started my show. So, how do you pronounce his name? Is it Beto?
I've heard it Beto.
Beto? Okay, Beto O'Rourke.
Yes.
So, it turns out that Beto O'Rourke is a hacker. You want to tell me more about that, or?
I would love to, but the problem is, I'm more of an idea guy. See, one of the things I do with my consultant group in the city.
Yeah.
And I don't do it as regularly.
Wait, you have a consultant group in the city too?
Yes.
Oh, cool. Okay. You can pitch anything you want. So give detail as you want.
The New York Small Business Specialists group that meets second Wednesday of every month at Microsoft's Conference Center in Manhattan. A bunch of consultants from Long Island, New York City, New Jersey, Connecticut, Westchester.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been going to that for 14, 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
But I've kind of unofficially taken it over to a large extent, as I seem to be the one getting the room, submitting the names, trying to find speakers, which
You're the president of you're the leader of that group, and I'm the president of the Long Island Linux Users Group.
Mm-hmm.
So we've taken over the tech world in the region.
I'd like
Why don't
to
we do an evil
so.
Laugh together?
That's the
Continue.
Best I get.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Sorry.
So where was I?
Yeah, you were talking about your group. The SBS.
Yeah.
And in the Microsoft building. You just plugged it.
So, yeah, that wasn't the point, though.
That wasn't the point? All right, well, what was the point?
I'm trying to remember.
Okay. So,
The ideas. I put together this
idea, man.
So, actually, I can't take credit for the idea of this because another member of the group has been doing a presentation for our group.
Right.
That he calls the SBS News, which he goes through various websites.
You started that, though.
No, he did.
Oh, he did.
He
okay.
did many years ago.
Okay.
And what I do pales in comparison to what he does.
Wow, okay.
But he would go through, gather, read all the articles, and his little motto was, I read so you don't have to.
Nice.
When he was unable to make meetings, I started trying to throw together my version of it.
Right.
My motto was, I skim so you know what to read.
Good.
So, and as far as the Beto O'Rourke thing, I skimmed it, but I don't know all the details of it.
Right. Okay. So, it is amazing. I actually read all about it.
Okay.
So, for people who don't know, Beto O'Rourke was outed by someone in the group, I think, as a hacker. He wasn't just any hacker. He was part of an elite hacker group known, a successful elite hacker group known as the Cult of the Dead Cow. Mm-hmm. So the Cult of the Dead Cow put together something called Back Orifice, which is a suite of exploits that attacked Microsoft's enterprise systems in the late 90s and early 2000s. All right. So this is not only very visible hacktivism against Microsoft, but it was very successful hacktivism against Microsoft. So this brings up a really interesting question. Now he's kind of he listens to punk, he rides a skateboard. I'm not endorsing him. I don't think he's particularly interesting, but this brings up a really good point. First of all, technocracy, duh, but I mean, the guy is literally a hacker that's running for president.
Mm-hmm.
But also, is activism disqualifying for politics. So in his defense, I'll say about, like, say, Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders has been arrested a bunch of times, being at protests and, you know, blocking something, or mm-hmm. just the police decide they don't like them and arrested them. And there's lots of, it's not just him, there's lots of politicians that have been on the hook for doing things. But, you know, how much monetary damage is there when you block a doorway or block a street? This guy wrote a suite of exploits that was a huge, I mean, I was against Microsoft at the time, you know, and I'm actually much more pro Microsoft now. And I'll probably be against them again, and then I'm for them again. It all depends. But, you know, I kind of got where he was coming from. Microsoft was getting really scary because it was very hard to do business without them, and I don't think that that's necessarily true anymore. I think that if you use them in your business scenario, it's because you want to and because you think they have something to offer. But that wasn't really as true in the 90s. You kind of had to sometimes. And there were a lot of people angry. People would cheer and scream like maniacs on as much as you can on the internet. So I guess it's just using caps on Slashdot. When the Cult of the Dead Cow would release something or make some announcement about how Microsoft was bad. Mm. So what do you think about him in that context? Is he a good guy or bad guy? Is it just him that's not okay and that what he did was okay?
So, without, or at least for this moment, trying to not get too much into
just make
the
it
current
generic.
Political
you make,
climate.
You don't have to make it about him. There'll be more hackers, is what I'm saying.
I do think our current president has basically lowered the bar for anybody. You know, hacker, whatever. I mean,
he has, let's be politically correct about it, he has expanded the Overton window.
Sure.
Which is a way to say that he's opened up the debate from what was acceptable a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
So, what he did in the past, look, if he's never been convicted and if he's learned stuff from it, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, that's, politically speaking, that's one of the things that gets me is that politicians aren't allowed to change their mind mm-hmm. because then they're flip-flopping.
Right, completely.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right, I don't necessarily agree with that, but that's the public climate for
sure. Well, I mean, all these people are running for president. I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, I'm going to do the other thing. And then they get into office, and often they don't.
Right.
And I'm willing to give most politicians the benefit of the doubt that once they actually hold the office, they have a lot more information than they did before they did.
Right, right. Oh, for sure. I mean, it's official.
And so
they have a book that you they hand you and say, okay, here's the truth. And so, it's not necessarily what's on the news.
So if you are saying you're going to do one thing, mm-hmm. and publicly it's what everybody seems to want, mm-hmm. and then Guantanamo closure.
Right.
You know, Obama wanted to do that for 8 years, and it never closed.
Right.
He did what he could to pare it down, but it's still there.
Right.
And in
he
my
opinion...
He promised
to do what when we let him out of jail? Yeah.
In my opinion, he reached a point where, look, I he wants to close it.
Right.
But the reality is, so he can't.
So what you're saying is when someone gets into the presidency, their hair goes gray, and then their set of what's possible changes.
Yeah, and I think people should look at what the candidates are saying, and first of all, the candidates actually have to mean this, but assuming that they do, you want them to give the candidates leeway in changing their mind or not being able to accomplish what they otherwise promised, because now that they have more information, certain realities can be considered.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that's probably true. You know, I think in a way, having the Overton window opened up so wide is actually giving us a chance to redefine what politicians mm-hmm. are going to do. I think this is Generation X's chance. I hope the millennials don't ruin it for us. No, the millennials won't ruin it for us. We're hearing a small minority. That's the problem. So, you know, the people who are not the boomers, who are almost as big as the boomers are, have a chance to finally redefine things. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I mean, I see it. Okay, I was just curious if you had something.
No, I Off the top of my head, knowing this makes me more inclined to vote for him, not less.
Wow, okay.
Because he should have some understanding,
right,
and experience with technology that hopefully he can trickle down to the rest of us.
Okay, hold on. I have my notes written out. It was politicians. Oh, that's the next page. Ted Stevens with a series of tubes. Remember that one? Which is either the smartest thing a politician about the internet. He called the internet a series of tubes. And people responded by putting up uteruses and fallopian tubes. You know, yes, Ted, that's what it is. But actually, it's a really good bridge for someone who doesn't have any idea. Mm. You know, Isaac and I talked a bit about metaphors. What do you think about metaphors?
Like?
Metaphors, you know, like
yes,
comparing a car.
Simile.
Oh, right. Yeah. I see what you did there. Oh, you zing me. Okay.
I like metaphors.
Myself. You do?
I do, too. I think for people who don't understand something, they're a way to help people understand something.
Right. All right. Fair enough. So, okay. And, his complaint was that if you take it too far, if you keep running with it, that's when craziness happens and people start making bad decisions based on the metaphor. But I actually think that there's another... God, I really need a word for it. You know, one of the things is it's hard to discuss some of the things that come up on the show, that come up in the technocracy, because we need new words, because we don't have words for it. You know, I was talking about this is a complexity horizon where you just hit a point where the words are not keeping up with the ideas anymore. But...
I was looking for a Sniglet dictionary the other day. I couldn't find a good one.
What is a Sniglet?
You didn't watch Not Necessarily the News in the early 80s on HBO?
No, what is that?
Oh, I loved that show. I was like 7 at the time, but I loved the show.
That's all right. I watched the freaking news when I was in first grade, so I'm watching Tom Brokaw talk about Ethiopia.
It was sort of a news parody show.
Yeah.
Kind of like SNL's Weekend Update or something like that.
Right.
That included, among other things, fake advertisements and...
Oh, so it's like The Onion before The Onion was around.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
And they had a feature on there where somebody talked about Sniglets, which is words that should be in the dictionary but aren't.
Okay.
I wish I could give you an example.
Humble brag. Well, actually, it's in now. So the dictionaries have caught up. They're putting words in much faster now. So they used to be years and years and years, and it's this long, complicated process. Basically, their threshold's almost done nothing. So, the Urban Dictionary is only the Urban Dictionary is the alpha version of the Webster Dictionary at this point. So, so Sniglets, huh? Okay.
Yes.
All right, so there was something I wanted to...
Yeah, I feel a little naked because I don't have a computer to look things up right now.
I know, right? That's awesome, though. So we need all this language to talk about the things that we want to talk about, and I'm finding myself at a loss. I think I've branched one too many times, too much forking. It's forking awful. Let's see. So let's go on to the next thing, and we can always come back. So one of the things I wanted to talk to you... All right, so this is one of the things that I'm afraid of, is that I'm going to run out of words on this show. So last show, Rich and I went for 2 hours and 45 minutes. And around 2 hours and 45 minutes, I just started stumbling around. Like, I didn't know what to say anymore. And I got home, and my wife starts talking to me, and I just look at her. I say, okay. And she didn't understand what was going on. And then, like, she comes over to me and asks me a question. I said, sure. And that's all I said. And she's like, what's wrong with you? I ran out of words. So I couldn't believe it. So if you don't make me run out of words tonight, my wife's going to be really mad at me. So you have a job, which is to challenge me.
So I need to keep you talking. Okay.
You need to keep me talking. Right, because otherwise she's going to hunt you down. Or at least she'll express her disappointment. I guess she's going to get the final word on if someone can come back on the show, because if they don't make me run out of words, then she's not happy. And a happy wife is a happy life. One of the things you brought up in your notes was red light cameras. So what exactly were you thinking with that? What would be the...
Was I talking about... I may have mentioned that. I don't know. It's one of those things that it all depends on the person involved.
Right.
But it's always bugged me. I've gotten 3 red light camera tickets in my life.
Criminal. Go ahead.
With the exception of one, which was for making a right turn without coming to a complete stop.
Right.
The other two, I ran the light by less than half a second.
Right.
And that just annoys the hell out of me.
Did you smoke your tires as you did it?
No.
No? Okay. Were you sideways? Were you drifting?
From my perspective, if somebody ends up running a red light by that little time, let's say 1 second or less, it should be kind of like a first-time infraction. Like you have points on your license.
Oh, that's what you meant. Okay.
Where you get once every 18 months or once every 36 months, you can get a warning for your first violation.
Right.
Because I'm the type of person who, if I get a warning in the mail, I'm going to be that much more careful about it the next 6 months to a year.
Right. Oh, yeah. I only get caught at a camera once, and then I
right.
know. You know.
And look, if you blatantly do it, you ran the light by 5 seconds or something, then you deserve a ticket.
Right, right. You're forcing cars to plow into buildings and
but
stuff.
But if you just miscalculated a little bit, you, for whatever reason...
Miscalculation is verboten!
By half a second. Just first time in 18, 36 months, you send a warning.
Right.
And then you ticket the guy for the second instance.
Okay. Yeah, I agree with that. That
you know, makes sense. It's kind of like, be fair to people.
So what about if Beto was the one that hacked the cameras to prevent them from giving people first-time tickets?
Hey, I'm all for it.
Nice, nice. So you're on Kohlberg's sixth level of development then, where law doesn't make morality, where morality makes law.
Oh, yeah.
That's the most advanced one.
I mean,
it's a compliment.
No, there's something that made a lot of sense to me. I mean, I think it was a Facebook meme I saw. Mm-hmm. But it was something like, you know, it was legal to discriminate. It was legal to, I think something about the Nazis in World War II. Mm-hmm. You know, it was legal in Germany to take Jews away.
Right.
You know, it was legal for slavery.
Slavery was legal, yeah.
Yeah.
Not just in the United States, by the way. It was other countries,
yeah.
too. In particular, Rome. But in
just
Greece,
because
Greece.
It's legal doesn't make it good or correct.
Right. Completely agreed.
And to that end, you know, if something is morally wrong but technically legal, I don't know that I have a big problem with people doing something to get around it.
Right, right. So, you know, Socrates died arguing with you. You know, he basically said, yeah, go ahead and kill me because it's the law and I must follow it. But, of course, he was just being very meta. It takes, you have to have some stones to be so meta that it involves your own death.
Mm.
Yeah.
I'm more concerned about the present day.
Yeah, I think he's wrong. No, it was a good point philosophically, but yeah, he's wrong. I think that we should strive. We should use our knowledge of morality to write laws that make sense.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I think laws can get completely out of control, and your only choice is to disobey them. So, I mean, you can't be moral and be upstanding for your entire life. I think that's probably a fair statement. I don't know if you disagree with that.
I think it really depends on...
I mean, upstanding legally. At some point, you're going to have to break a law. I mean, I'd be major. You can try to minimize the law breakage so it does the least damage. But
well, I haven't necessarily done studies on this.
I'm trying to get you to admit to a felony. It's just philosophy.
Well, no, I'm not technically admitting to a felony here.
Right, right.
I'm just pointing out that I haven't done studies on this, but thinking about it, I think it's probably reasonably true. There's I think it's a book.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't tell you the author's name, but if you Google it,
the Anarchist Cookbook.
No, that's just fun.
We found it.
But a book, I think it's titled Three Felonies a Day.
Right.
Which suggests that most people are committing 3 felonies a day.
Wow. Okay. So that's pretty bad.
Yeah, and if you think about it, what you're doing, you may well be doing that. You know, if you're doing things with your computer and music illegally, if you're, you know, taking a shortcut through a particular place.
5 years in prison for the Digital Millennium Copyright Act.
Yeah.
Yeah, for violations.
I mean, there's enough things, enough laws, that frankly, if they want you in jail, you're going to be in jail.
So you're saying we're in a police state? Because that's what a police state is. If a policeman can decide to arrest you anytime, in other words, so the way I see a police state is, if a policeman becomes an advanced persistent threat or an APT, then they can just arrest you anytime they feel like it, because all they have to do is follow you around for a sufficient amount of time, and they'll find probable cause. Now, I know the specific law is not allowing cops to follow people around, like, say, in traffic, but, you know, they could just lie about their whereabouts, you know, depending on what the rigor of their particular schedule is at the precinct they work at.
I'm almost afraid to go there. No,
go there.
not afraid of you.
Oh. We are determined to get the black vans in the parking lot simply through words.
I've heard enough stories, and look, many of them are probably just stories that have little, if any, fact to back them up.
Right.
But I've heard enough stories of police who will, and not just police, I mean, just figure law enforcement professionals.
Yes.
As a broad term.
We've actually invited a few to our group, so, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who will do things to make their cases stronger at the expense of reality.
Ah, interesting.
Whether it's
interesting, I thought you were going to say at the expense of the law, but at the expense of reality is very different effective, more permanent.
It is technically at the expense of the law, but you know the idea
not
of
not necessarily. Actually, I think that's not true. But okay, keep going.
The idea of, you know, planting evidence,
right,
or just being so, and to some extent, this goes to the prosecutors,
right,
law enforcement professionals, who are insisting that somebody's guilty because they have enough circumstantial evidence that they're not going to look for anymore.
Right.
And then you end up with people who didn't actually commit a crime serving time.
Right.
And even when evidence exonerates them, you never hear about, and maybe they are, but I certainly don't hear about, a reopened investigation to find the real criminal.
Mm-hmm.
So,
unless, of course, there's genetics, which has such ridiculous odds,
yeah,
against them being incorrect that no one can morally argue against it.
Yeah.
But if there isn't a case where there's genetics involved, there's no way out of it.
You have prosecutors arguing against genetic evidence today. I mean, it's
right. Well, it's usually custody. So, mm-hmm, if you assume custody is, you know, 100%, like unbeatable. But again, that's what you're talking about, is the distortion of custody.
Yeah.
Really?
The lack of sharing evidence with defense attorneens.
Whether it's just the information about what the cop was exposed to, or whether it's stuff or whatever.
I don't watch as much of John Oliver's show as I'd like, but he does some fantastic pieces on a variety of topics.
Right.
And, you know,
I think he's funny as hell, and I also find him really partisan. I'm like,
oh yeah,
yeah. I'm an independent, and like sometimes I'm like, yeah, and sometimes I'm like, please stop. It's not true. He's a little distorty, but I like him. I hate that I don't love him. Does that make any sense?
No, I mean all the shows.
Right.
As much as, and even the real news, which should really be called a show.
Right. Yeah.
You know, they distort things for their own points.
Do any news programs have typewriter noises in their intros anymore? They all used to be. Which, of course, is ridiculous now, right? Unless it's a clicking keyboard.
But the
exactly. Clicking keyboards. Yeah, I just realized our engineer can't have a clicky keyboard because you'll hear it all over the. But I love the clicky Model M's are the best. The Bucking Spring. That's right.
Bucking Springs and Cherry Blues.
Yep. That was IBM's patent originally. So
yeah,
they're awesome. I love them. Mm-hmm. Do you use that kind of keyboard or? Do you have a bucking spring, or is it just a soft touch?
I'm actually using a Microsoft keyboard at home now.
Right.
Which is really nice. It's soft touch.
I think they do have a bucking spring, Microsoft. IBM opened it up. I think it either went off patent or they allowed other people to use it.
They're not the same.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they're like...
Ever since they tried to recreate it, the original Model M's were like a really specific style that like everyone loved about it, from the ergonomics and everything, and just recreating it didn't work.
Oh, okay.
They noticed.
I think in my office, not in use, but in a drawer, I have two or three PS2 IBM keyboards.
Right.
The clicky.
Right. But they're sitting in your closet.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah. I'm just a masochist. My poor kids are trying to sleep, and it sounds like a machine gun going off in my office. But so okay, well that was interesting. I'm not a lawyer, so I can't talk more about at the expense of the law without talking about something specific. But I completely know what you mean. I could bring up Aaron Schwartz. Actually, I should put him on my list. Do you have any opinions on him, or no? You don't know. Okay, he was the guy that was basically broke into a server room at MIT. They didn't break in. He worked there. He just was authorized to be in that particular server room. Hooked up a computer onto the local network on a particular server rack and started scanning through all the journals, trying to compile metadata on which journals said what about what. He was just doing statistics on scientific journals. And the FBI brought him into custody, and he ended up killing himself because his entire future was just screwed, and everyone was furious with MIT for having done that to him, and the FBI. And honestly, I don't think I've totally forgiven them. I mean, on the one hand, you know, he should have gotten toughened up and not committed suicide. On the other hand, maybe that's not what happened. And also, you know, everyone can't be a pro wrestler, you know, or a first responder and have that kind of, or a soldier and have that kind of hardened mental attitude where they're indestructible. So,
going back to media for a moment in the news and such.
Yeah.
It's actually something that bothers me a lot. I mean, I listen to the news fairly often, whether it's CNN or News Radio of New York. But you can't take it too seriously. CNN is really...
What do you mean?
CNN is really funny because, to me...
It's not funny.
It's hysterical. They will beat a story to death.
Right. Yeah.
They will spend two weeks...
They weren't like that a few years ago. It's pretty recent.
That's when I first noticed it.
Yeah, that's when it changed.
Well, when the that flight disappeared in Southeast Asia, they spent a month on that one topic where if by the end of three weeks, if three quarters of the hour wasn't talking about something to do with the disappearance of that plane,
right,
they were doing something wrong.
Yeah, that's what you do in public relations. That's not journalism. Journalism is saying something someone else doesn't want you to say.
And the other thing that bothers me about today's journalism is listen to any interview that a reporter does with just about anybody,
right,
especially if it's involving a crime, like, you know, the car that killed the busload of children, you know, wasn't that a horrible thing? Why are you leading them? I mean, sure, morally it was a horrible thing, but you're the reporter. Let the person who saw it decide what he thinks about it.
Are you leading me? Yeah, exactly. No, you're right.
No,
you're totally right.
Everything is... You know, was it a gruesome picture to see all that?
Yeah.
Was it frightening when that tree came down right in front of your car?
Right.
I mean, what do you think?
Of course. That's the dumbest question you can ask.
And yet, that's the only questions they ask.
It's the news of the lowest common denominator.
Yeah.
I am a huge, past tense, huge, I was a huge fan of the news. When I was a kid, you know, when I was in high school in the 80s, it was totally different. I would watch the nightly news every day, I would read the Times, and it just, sometime between late 80s and early 2000s, it just got bad enough that I really stopped paying attention. It's just gotten worse from there.
I don't want to go into tremendous detail describing the place or the incident, but there was a particular case that got some significant media coverage when they found the person they suspected of doing it, and I was close enough to talk with some folks who worked at the place the person was found.
Right.
And when I went home that night, out of curiosity, I ended up watching, managed to watch, I think it's three different news broadcasts.
Mm-hmm.
All three said something different, notably different about what happened that day, compared to what I was told by somebody who was working there.
Wow.
Now, it is a developing story, sure,
mm-hmm.
but can you try to get it right? I mean, or try to not provide false information?
Well, the interesting thing is, so you have everyone's attention. Well, there's lots of interesting things about that. But you have everyone's attention, and then, you know, you report one thing, and it's not true for whatever reason. Let's assume it's the most innocent possible reason. It was just an honest mistake,
mm-hmm.
and their source was not the most reliable source. I mean, obviously, they had different sources, and the
yeah.
story is different from everybody. So, how do you get a retraction? Because the thing that got that information out to so many people was the shock of it. And then, so how do you get an equal shock for the retraction? You know, retractions are page 50 stuff.
Well, one of the problems when you have news stories like that is that it makes people react to what you're first telling them. And so even when you change your story, there's now that doubt.
Right.
And, you know, it comes up to something where, especially if you're watching one particular station.
Right.
It's basically perception. This is something I've been saying for a little while now. Perception is reality. It doesn't matter what really happened.
Mm-hmm.
What you perceive to have happened is what happened.
Right.
So when, go back to politicians.
Right.
When a politician says something, then whatever they say, if you're going to believe it, that's your reality.
Right.
You know, if a politician tells you that this place did this thing to that person, okay.
Well, this goes back to something we were talking about the other day. I don't know. I kind of branched off with someone else, but I don't want to out him in case he disagrees with something I say. But that what is real, and you know, what is really the problem when people go crazy, and you know. So the conclusion that I came to, and I haven't really totally flushed this out, but it seems to make sense to me, is that I think that the thing that's important, because I was like, so Rich started talking about, Lesho, our guest, started talking about what almost sound like supernatural experiences, but specifically it was with aliens, right? And and telekinesis, both of which I have. I strongly suspect they're possible, but have no evidence for. Right? I completely understand them. I think they're interesting. I'm not, and I was kind of hard on him, actually. I feel bad about this. I was kind of hard on him. I was kind of like, you know, mocking him a little bit. But the thing is, I think it doesn't matter whether what he's saying was true or not, which it may be. What's important is that he's earnest, and he isn't acting in a way that's blocking other people's freedoms, that on information he cannot be certain of.
Hmm.
Right? If you can identify a faith, you know, since a faith is just something you know is that you know is true, but you can't prove. Really, that's, you know, this is. I've had a lot of people argue with me on this definition of faith, but if you can have a better word, give it to me. But
No, I generally like that definition, and it's funny you put it that way because, you know, I don't consider myself an atheist.
No, okay. I was going to bring it up, but okay, keep going.
I do consider myself an agnostic.
Right.
And what I like to say about religion.
Go for it.
I don't have faith.
Okay.
I have hope.
Okay. Interesting.
I hope that there's something after death, because if there isn't, it's kind of depressing.
Right, right. Yeah, that is kind of the worms crawl in, the worms crawl out. Yeah. Yeah.
So,
well, you know, on the one hand, thinking there's nothing after death is an awesome motivator. You have one shot, and if you blow it, you've left no impact and had no impression, and you haven't done any good in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it only matters if you want to do good, if you're not only worried about something bigger than yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But so it kind of puts people who don't believe in doing things bigger than themselves at a loss. But Yeah, I mean, that's I really like that, because hope is bliss in the future, right? So if you break it down, you're you know, we the way I think it's happening is that we have our emotions define our timelines internally. Mm-hmm. When we're moving backwards or forwards in time, that's why you can listen to a song you haven't heard in a while, and you literally can snap back into an emotional state you haven't been in years. Because what it's doing is it's setting your timeline. You know, it doesn't always work like that. Sometimes there's something more pressing where the song would just fade into the background, you wouldn't hear it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if nothing else is going on, you know, you can get nostalgic and you start feeling how you were feeling at that time. And so my point when you're what was my point? Oh yeah, so, one too many forks again. So when you're following that kind of emotional an emotional path, that hope is just clearing an emotional path in the future, using the emotions that you're expecting to occur. Mm-hmm. So the good thing about that is that you can kind of define your own destiny by defining a path. And if you use a lot of reason, use a lot of logic and a lot of intuition, and merge them together successfully with good quality reason, you know, you can actually set up a path for yourself and make your own destiny. The bad part is if you get it wrong, then your hopes are dashed over and over and over and over again. And without faith or without hope, you're kind of screwed. Then life starts to look really bleak. And it isn't just about what's going on with the worms, it's what's going on in the now.
Hmm.
So, yeah, so I mean, that's really good, and I think it probably works for you because you're so freaking smart. But, you know, if someone didn't have a high IQ and a high EQ, that could really go wrong for them. So, you know, you can't blame them for having faith, you know, and using faith
as a
way to avoid having your hopes dashed and that crushing your spirit.
You know,
that makes sense? Or am I too...
To an extent, it makes sense to me. I think it's... Some of the folks that I talk to...
I just made that up, by the way.
And some of the folks that I... Especially the folks who work in my industry and that I know who work in my industry.
Right.
I kind of...
There's one of everybody in our industry, right? In IT, there's one of everybody. Every race, every creed, every color, every sex, every imaginary state that a person could be in. You know, I'm sure there's someone who thinks they're a robot, you know. So...
I've been fortunate enough to meet a variety of technicians from all over the world, and you know, the Microsoft MVP thing that I got to be awarded with for over a decade, that was an experience.
You deserved it. I mean, every time I've asked you a question, either you know the answer or you can find it. So, in my opinion, you deserved it.
It's
give the man some cred.
So, the program itself was intended, as I understand it at least, was intended to reward and award people who spent a lot of time helping out in the community.
Mm-hmm.
The community of Microsoft products, of course. I mean, they're not going to give it to you because you're doing Linux all the time. So.
Right. Yeah, well, you know.
But that doesn't mean that maybe Red Hat doesn't have
actually,
a
program. Now it's a level playing field. Some people have to use Linux, and some people have to use Microsoft. So everybody's on everybody's playing field.
Well,
now.
What I will say, actually, is that these days there might actually be an MVP award for Linux from Microsoft.
Yeah, actually,
because they have gotten a lot more into open source over the last few years.
Is that how it works? You just vote?
It would be. If I were still an MVP, I could nominate you. But
really?
Since I'm not an MVP, somebody else has to nominate you.
That's okay. What happened? Why aren't you an MVP?
So I got the award originally because I left my full-time day job, ended up at a client where I had no one else to talk to, like the office of 20 tech people I used to work in. So I ended up on Experts Exchange, as you mentioned before. I'd been there a little
bit. Here's the secret that most people don't know. That's leadership. Sometimes when you're out in front, you're alone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So keep going.
So I ended up on Experts Exchange and answering a lot of questions from various people about all things Windows. And basically, eventually I discovered somebody had written a utility that was fantastic. And I still think Experts Exchange is doing themselves a huge disservice by not doing something to recreate the utility.
What's the utility?
Back in the day, I think it was called QuickPost.
Okay.
Somebody had written this program to basically screen scrape their website and present to you in a GUI application on your computer all the questions that matched a particular filter that you configured, or potentially all the questions on the site, as they came in. It was a constant feed of new questions that updated within seconds of the question being asked. And the same application allowed you to respond. So I'd have multiple monitors. I'd have the application running on a small 15-inch monitor on the computer. And whenever a new question came in, I'd look up. Oh, how do you do that? I know that. Click in the window, answer the question, submit. People were getting answers from me and other people within a minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes on a web forum.
That's awesome.
How many web forums have you ever known that could respond that quickly?
So I want to tell you, I have, you know, I've been doing, I was doing system administration, eventually system engineering, even if I wasn't formally recognized doing it, but I was definitely doing engineering. For 20-something years, and my best tech support experience has been a 3-minute wait in a window and then an escalation process. Never that quick. So that is the fastest I've ever heard of.
And the fact that Experts Exchange didn't object to the program was great. But the problem was, over time, they would change their website, they'd change the format. And whenever they changed the format, it broke the screen scraping utility. Now, the author would quickly make some adjustments and it would work. But it got to a point, I believe, I think he may have actually told us why he stopped at one point, but I think it got to a point where he was just tired of doing the updates and that was that.
Right.
But kind of back to the MVP thing.
The man won!
What got me doing that stuff, being able to answer those questions as quickly as I could, I was answering something like 150, 200 questions a month.
Wow.
Which if you, and let me clarify, I was being awarded the answer in 150 to 200 questions a month. I was probably participating in something like 300 to 400.
Wow. So what you're saying is the voice of enterprise, the enterprise should be you. Computer, analyze this. All right, 1 minute.
But
sacrilege, I know.
Because I was so prolific there,
right?
Somebody, I don't know if it was another MVP, if it was somebody from Microsoft, but somebody noticed me there and said, hey, we'd like to give you an award from Microsoft for most valuable professional, which, again, is meant to cover the people who help out in the community. Okay.
Great.
So, as of, I think it was July 1st of 2006, they gave me the award. And they kept giving it to me every year because I kept answering questions.
So it was your shtick and you just ran with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
And, you know, other
things. Helped a lot of people.
They would give the award for other things as well. If you did presentations, if you wrote articles, blog posts, answering questions wasn't the only way of getting it.
Right.
But you had to be providing both accurate and professional information to the community. And that was all great. And the problem was, over the years, I swear, every year, maybe from 2008, the first couple years I was probably doing as much as I thought I was. But every year after that, I felt like I was doing a little bit less, and a little bit less, and a little bit less, and a little bit less. And of course,
were you lazy, or was Microsoft's documentation getting better?
No, to both.
Okay.
The problem was things were moving to the cloud,
right,
and less in-house,
right,
especially for smaller businesses, which would be the ones who really need the forums. And I mean, there's still stuff out there in small businesses and people asking questions, but it went from at a time where you might have had, I don't know, 1,500 questions a day or more streamed through the site,
mm-hmm.
to now, in my opinion, they're doing email notifications, and I probably get like 150 a day.
So the entire site is doing less business,
yeah.
than you were producing when you were an MVP. Has
it
all moved to someplace else, or people just know everything now?
I think the site itself has gone through several changes over the years.
Right.
At first, there was it was point-based. It still is point-based, but the way that they did things is you got a certain number of points, and they replenished a little bit each day,
mm-hmm.
and you could ask a question and assign it a point value so that you were limited kind of to how many questions you could ask,
mm-hmm.
and the points that were assigned would get added to the answerer's account, and that's one of the ways that they ranked people who answered questions.
Mm-hmm.
They ended up moving to more of a paywall.
Mm-hmm.
Then they kind of got rid of the paywall. Now they're back to a paywall. They've just gone back and forth on how they do things. You've had other sites come into existence with more dominance, such as Stack Exchange.
Yeah. What does Stack Exchange have over Experts Exchange?
In my opinion, not much.
Well.
but the problem is that people use it. People like it for some reason.
Okay.
I've tried answering questions there. One of the things that I don't like about Stack Exchange is that they don't like opinion questions. What's the best antivirus? That's an opinion question. No, don't ask that here.
Really?
That's the sense that I've gotten over the years.
Yeah,
maybe
well,
it's changed.
No, but that's kind of crazy because, you know, people learn from stories.
Yeah.
And when you ask open-ended questions, someone can tell a story as a response to it because there's no wrong answer. And you shouldn't. I mean, you can penalize people for having open-ended questions. But the thing is, when you tell a story, you teach people details that maybe they didn't even need to know to ask. It's almost like oppression of ideas, which just ticks
so,
me off.
Kind of along those lines.
Yeah.
I've probably been accused of rambling and going to some extent off topic,
mm-hmm.
on a number of questions that I've answered. And
you're perfect for the show, by the way. Sometimes that's a feature, not a bug.
And by a number, I mean, given the number that I've answered over the years, probably in the thousands. Because, in my opinion, discussing the technology or why somebody asked the wrong question.
Yeah.
You know, how do I do this? Well, you shouldn't be doing that. You should be doing this instead.
Okay.
You know, or explaining why.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that if you give an explanation why.
Yeah, but.
But, you know, sometimes this I mean, one of the things, so this is one of the things I always loved about the Linux space, is that, and Unix too, not just segmenting it to Linux. I think this is becoming more true with Microsoft also, which is awesome. But, that there's always more than one way to skin a cat. You know, what did that phrase even mean? That would be a good one for you to look up. I don't even know what the heck what did I just say? I probably
let me get back to that in a little bit.
Yeah, yeah,
I have my
sure.
own opinion
but
on that.
You know, you could just script, you could glue all the little tiny pieces that make up Linux in really unholy ways. Mm. So, yeah, go ahead.
Where was I?
You were you were doing well. You were saying interesting things, and I interrupted you.
Yeah.
And we were talking about Stack Exchange.
And not liking opinion pieces.
And not liking opinion pieces. And I said there's lots of ways to do things.
Going over.
All right, I got it.
Sorry.
Sorry.
I
invoked him.
It says the multiple ways to kill a cat was actually a derivative of a term that was used earlier in the 1830s. There are similar phrases to it, such as there are more ways to kill a cat than choking it with cream. But the original term was in the 17th
that
century.
Makes even less sense.
Where there are more than one ways to kill a dog than hanging.
What? Who is drowning their cats in cream and hanging their dogs? What was going on back then? All right, that's just even
scarier.
I guess
it's just a dark term that caught on.
Really?
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay. Backing away slowly from the old people. So, all right, keep going.
So, in any case, talking to or presenting stories and arguments that may even be talking about just one small aspect of the question.
Yeah.
I don't mind having a debate back and forth with people about that one small aspect in somebody's question.
Right.
But there are definitely people out there who don't appreciate that. Mm-hmm. I ask this question, I want this answer only. Don't tell me why it's wrong. Don't tell me why it's the wrong question. Don't. This is what I want.
Mm-hmm.
But, sorry about that.
That's okay. It's fine.
But
I like your enthusiasm. I expect you to knock it down again.
We'll see. You know, I feel like if you can have a professional debate about why you feel something is one way when versus another,
right?
Then people are going to learn, whether it's the guy who's asking the question or the guy 6 months from now who's got the same problem, looks it up and says, oh, interesting, maybe I should do it that way instead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, so having a technical problem of any sort, whether it doesn't matter if it's a car or a computer or, you know, trying to figure out the best way to set the timer on your microwave oven, you know, having... there may be multiple ways to do it, and you know, it doesn't matter if someone has the way that they think is the right way, that may just be the right way for their goals. Your goals may be different, and you can't discourage people from examining that further.
And
so these two sites are doing this. Like the Experts Exchange has faded off a bit. It seems like it's not dead, but it's not as active.
I would love to see them get back to.
And Stack Exchange is doing this thing where they're really restricting the kinds of questions you can ask. You know,
and no duplicates.
This is the thing that's dangerous about this facts not feelings thing, because sometimes feelings can give you, just like metaphors can give you good information and get you started on a new path that's better, you know, feelings can too, and so can ideas. You know, without feelings or originality, you know, in thought, you never have an opportunity for ideas.
So one of the things that I lose track of.
You're talking about. Well, I was asking. Well, what I was asking was Experts Exchange and Stack Exchange. Is there another one that does it right? I mean, it just seems like, well, has everyone lost their mind and they went from the good platform to the bad platform?
I think Experts Exchange. One of the things that people have criticized Experts Exchange about is poor quality answers, and at times they have that problem.
Right. Yeah, well, that's just life, man.
Well, yeah, but when the site is free...
If kids never got poor quality answers, we'd all be scholars.
When the site was free, you'd have everybody and their brother trying to answer a question.
Right.
And half of them would just be doing it wrong.
Mm-hmm. But fair enough, yeah. There is wrong answers, yeah.
You get to know, or at least over the years I got to know, and I think the others got to know me, the folks on the site who actually know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
And what's funny is, I still remember this, in 2008 and 2010, Experts Exchange did a conference. They called it their core conference, where they took about 40, 50 people who were volunteers on the site, sort of volunteer editors and moderators of sorts. I mean, they are a for-profit company, but they had a lot of volunteers at the time.
Right.
Brought them in, brought some of their top experts in, and put them in a room, well, a couple of rooms for a couple of days with their staff and ran through ideas. You know, what do you want? What do you think would be good if we did this? You know, what if we do this? Do you think that would work?
Mm-hmm.
They were really trying to, in my opinion at least, come up with ways to improve their service so that they could help more people and help us help more people.
Right. Yeah, that's...
You know, they weren't just there, hey, we have a forum, great, let's just let people use it and be done with it.
Yep.
But they haven't done those conferences in almost a decade. As far as I know, at least I haven't been invited back to any of them.
Right.
And from what I've heard through occasional posts in the place, they haven't done any of them.
Right.
Apparently they'd like to. I'd like them to.
Right.
But...
Well, I mean, it just so for sure the tech world has gotten bigger.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the past decade alone, the growth, it must have at least like tripled the employment roles. I'm not saying everybody's a senior, whatever. you know, whether engineer or programmer or anything. So there's definitely more people out there. But how are they communicating? Is it just videos? Have we just switched to a video world where people are just doing demo videos? I mean, honestly, when I want to learn something, that's what I do. That's usually the first place. First, I'll do like a quick search in whatever search engine and just, you know, put in a few key terms. You know, we've had lots of experience doing that, so you know how to do it. And if that strikes out, I'm like, okay, well, maybe there's a concept I'm not getting, and then I'll try the videos. Usually, I don't get past the videos. If I haven't found it in one, I found it in the other. So is it the paywall? I mean, are paywalls just a poor idea?
From my perspective, I think they need to have a way to use it for free.
Right.
Which, for a very long time, they did.
Because they can't hook people without it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
When you require...
I mean, I'm sure not going to sign up now if you told me that. Sorry, guys.
When you require somebody to pay to ask a question...
Right.
There are other places to go.
Right.
But one of the things that they did early on was, look, and I like this model. I think a lot of people early on did not, in the MVP community, a lot of folks that I talked to really didn't like Experts Exchange.
Okay.
And they didn't like it because, from their perspective, it wasn't free.
Mm-hmm.
I took a little different approach because I liked it. It was free to me. But it was free to me.
But that's kind of the technocrat mentality. You know, I am the king. Well, you will do things to please me.
It was free to me.
I will not pay.
Because I helped people.
Right.
I spent my time there, and as a reward for my time, they let me use the site for nothing.
Right.
And it wasn't just me. I mean, that was their business model. If you're going to help people, you can use it for nothing. If you just want to take, then give us some money.
Right.
And I'm fine with that. If you want to take without giving anything, time or money, then you can't use it.
Well, you know, so, of course, I don't, you know, like running our meetings costs money, you know, and I'm involved with my church, and that's a nonprofit, and that costs money, you know, and I've been involved with another nonprofit, and that costs money, you know, and in my experience, I mean, you know, it depends. If the people who are attendees are always the same attendees, guilt works great. You know, but it only works in person. So it doesn't really work. Guilt doesn't. How do we make guilt work over the internet? You know, do we need to just like do like create a voice synthesizer that sounds like your grandma and make you feel guilty and like, oh, I'm sorry, grandma. All right, somebody. I didn't realize you were eating cat food.
I you know, I don't have answers for everything.
Right.
You know, I have a large...
Well, you know, I think if someone comes up with a model, money, they'll succeed.
I have many, many different opinions and thoughts about many different things.
Right.
And I am a firm believer that, hey, we should try them because in many cases, whatever it is that we're talking about, if we're thinking there's a problem, what's there now hasn't worked.
Right. Yeah, that's true. That's true. If you're talking about something in the current tense is a problem, just try something new.
Maybe the new idea will be worse. Maybe it'll be better.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're not going to approach it with an open mind, you're doomed to have the same failure that's been happening.
So basically what's happening with those forums is they're afraid to fail. Yeah. And as a result, they fail.
Look, maybe they'll get better.
This is like straight up Freudian psychology, you know, just manifesting the thing that you're most worried about.
They've been around, Experts Exchange has been around for 22 years, I think.
Yeah.
It's funny because I signed up with them in August of 1997.
Wow.
And I'm still there.
You don't have to tell a date.
It blows my mind that I've been there that long.
I know. I've been doing more than half my life. I've been doing computers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's impactful. All right. Well. So that's I think we squeezed all the blood out of that one. I had a question for you, actually.
Okay.
Can I use your? Can we exchange your expertise here? Do I have to pay you?
Try.
Are you gonna make me feel guilty? If I
can try.
All right. So that could be fun. I didn't think that was going to become a game, but that could be good.
See, I generally speaking, I'm probably too willing to share my technical knowledge and skills.
At, well, that's why I don't hate your guts, because I don't like information hoarders.
At probably little to no cost. However, what I will say is I then have a tendency to expect that whoever I share it with is going to in some way reciprocate.
Well, so, you know what that's called? Totally serious. You know what that's called? Friendship. Hmm? When you have a model where you have to reciprocate, where you're expected to, or there's consequences, that's an alliance. Very different things. Mm. You know, people mix them up all the time, and a lot of people add all kinds of properties onto friendship. Friendship is just the expectation of freedom with the occasional mishap, and then the return in exchange. So, you know, it's not explicitly, you don't have to give anything in a friendship, but of course, when you have really good terms like that, things flow. Mm-hmm. So, you know what? I mean, people just, you know, I guess the algorithms of social media aren't actually teaching them how to be friends. They're just teaching them how to be allies, right? Our interests ally at this moment. We're going to do this thing together. Our task is complete. Goodbye. Mm-hmm. Right? I sounded like Data when I said that, you know. Our mission is complete, Captain. You should leave.
I'd say more, was it Simon?
Oh, what? Let's not out anyone, all right?
I'm not talking about our mutually known Simon.
Okay.
I'm assuming you watch a particular TV show.
Which one is that? I have a new rule. I know you asked me to watch Captain Marvel, and I've seen the entire MCU. I did not get a chance to see it, but I'm glad I didn't.
Okay.
So I hope you don't mind if I change the topic. That
had nothing to do with this.
Right.
When I said to watch that, it was involving...
I thought you wanted to talk about it.
No, not necessarily.
Oh, I'm totally fine.
It was just because I made a reference to Flerkins and how I've owned several.
Right. Oh, yes. Yeah, so I'm aware. Well, they really... It's not a spoiler to say that the cat's not a cat. Everybody freaking knows that. I mean, they were teasing it because it was known in the comics, and they was... Can you really have spoilers when everything's based in the comics at some point?
I never read Captain/Miss Marvel, so...
I know, but like, I mean, if all you had to do is click on one MCU exposed video, and then your entire YouTube is dominated by it, and all you want to do is just talk about Thor for 3 days straight. So, you know, but I think I have a rule for the podcast, which is I promise not to spoil anything that's a month old or newer. Because people are busy, right? Mm-hmm. You know, it's not really fair. You got to give it a month, you know, especially in our industry. Maybe other people are less busy, but we're pretty freaking busy. I am so behind on the Orville. I've only watched the first couple of episodes of season two. So,
okay.
Yeah, so I can't talk. Well, it hurt me. I'm like, maybe it's not just me. So 1 month of moratorium. It hasn't been out a month, so we can't talk about it except talk about what's in the trailers and what's
I'm just talking about the character in your response. And you said you sounded like Data. I think you sounded more like Simon.
Simon. Who's Simon?
Isn't it Simon?
Simon? Oh. Which, in what?
The robot guy.
Simon. Oh, in the Orville.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, I did sound like him, didn't I? Yeah, you're right. That was because he's got a little more intonation. Data was more flat.
Not only that, but Data was nicer.
Yeah, you're right. Well, that's what's so great about the Orville. Humans still act like humans. Yeah. They're not like, you know, they're not like walking on eggshells. You know, like, hey, what's up? I hate you. Yeah, fuck you. All right, good. What's the matter? You hungover? Yeah, I am. And that's your fault. No, it's your fault. You know, they just talk like normal people. They don't have to be super, super careful. Yeah. Because when you're friends with someone and not allies, you trust them and you can screw up once in a while and you don't have to worry about having your head handed to you. Mm-hmm. Because, I don't know, I think that's a superior model that I can make a mistake once in a while, because if you don't make mistakes, then you're not human and then you're a freaking robot. Hence, we've come around full circle. Okay, we're done. No. So what was it? Oh yeah. So my technical question. Would you believe that I still haven't asked my question? That was like 5 minutes ago.
Yes.
That was pretty.
I would believe it.
Yeah, I would believe it too. So it was about. So you didn't. So that hacker conference that was just on the island. The B-Sides conference.
Yes.
Joe wrote it. Joe was one of the people running it, and actually he's going to be on next week if you're interested. I'll probably ask about the B-Sides. I think they're going to do it next year. So they had a smaller target audience.
Joe
Goldberg. He's part of Lilog. He's part of the group.
Okay.
So, yeah, he's our treasurer.
Oh,
that guy.
That
guy. So he was one of the people who helped set that up and make that happen. And
so you mean I could have gone if I called him and said, hey, can you get me in?
No, this is where I'm going. You couldn't have gone because they had a venue and they planned on like 200 and something people, and 300 and something people showed up, and now there's probably going to be more next time. They're going to have to get a bigger venue. Mm-hmm. They were packed, and people were trying to use their contacts, so the people who were working, to weasel more people in. And they couldn't. I tried, like three, four people I know who wanted to go couldn't go. So I'm guessing you didn't go to that because I didn't see you.
No.
Okay.
No.
So
I did try to register. I think it was like the day before.
Yeah. Yeah. Dude.
But
yeah, it was sold out a week before. I mean, it was like.
I mean, as luck would have it, it was one of those rare days that I also had a client that I had a project for that it kind of turned out I probably good that I couldn't have gone because.
Right. Right, so I didn't get to go to all the talks, but there was one talk that was interesting. And so what they were talking about is apparently a lot of the viruses that have been, you know, like we don't get so many viruses on the Linux side, but it happens a little more on the Windows side. Not picking on Windows, it also happens in Apple too. I think because they're more popular as desktops, so the quality of the tech, you know, the people who use those desktops aren't necessarily technocrats.
It's
they don't get it.
All economics.
Well, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's just economy of scale. There's just tons and tons and tons. It's a big target.
In the beginning, viruses...
For the virus writers, I mean, the economy of scale for the virus writers.
In the beginning, the viruses were there to annoy you and say, hey, look what I can make your computer do.
Remember the Urkel virus?
The which one?
The Urkel virus?
No, I just remember Stoned.
Oh, okay. Stoned?
The Stoned virus?
I don't know about that one.
Boot your computer up and your computer has been stoned.
Oh. I don't think I've bumped into that. Oh, okay.
You know,
yeah. Early Windows like 3.1 days was the Urkel virus, and it took the university I was at the time by storm, and they were running around trying to play whack-a-mole with it.
But basically, in the beginning, it was there to annoy you.
Uh-huh.
You know, maybe to be malicious and delete all your data.
You've been punked. Inconvenience.
It evolved when people realized that hey, I can make money off this.
Right.
So now the malicious software was taking control of your computer.
Well, this is kind of my point with Beto. I mean, he was, you know, that thing that he took part in writing, yeah, sure, it was hacktivism, but at the same time, I mean, there was real money involved. I mean, there must have been hundreds of millions of dollars of losses from back orifice. So,
I mean, you could even make an argument that things like that were done to expose how poorly written the software was.
I completely agree with that, too. That's why I'm confused. I really am legitimately confused on what to think about this.
But,
so,
you know, malicious software evolved to a point where now no one's doing it to annoy you.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing it because, hey, I can make money from this.
Right.
They're encrypting your files so they can get you to pay a fee.
This is where I'm going with this, right?
Or they're writing malicious software that will just sit in wait on your computer so that they can launch a denial of service attack on somebody. I mean,
so have you noticed any change in the malware? I mean, I realize you probably don't get a lot of malware because you actually keep your virus definitions to date and watch everything and log everything. But
I just don't do stupid things.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, it's true. It does work.
In many respects, that's what you have to do to be safe these
days. Well, I said that 2 episodes ago, and I had a problem with my server, and I'm not entirely sure that someone wasn't trying to hack me and failed.
Hmm.
And I was a little bit out of patch. I was like that much out of patch, and it didn't matter as much before, but I think it's starting to...
So, you know, what happens in the Windows world is, in my opinion, unless you are somebody of interest,
mm-hmm.
then you're just under attack.
Mm-hmm.
You're not under a directed attack, you're just under attack.
That's just between, you know, the throngs of being collateral damage in the cyber war versus having an advanced persistent threat that wants you and wants your stuff, either to hurt you or to get your stuff.
You know, I kind of tell my clients, like, look, who's going to attack you?
Mm-hmm.
Who specifically wants to attack you? You know,
my wife.
Maybe a competitor.
No, that's
maybe a relative.
My kids.
But if you don't have that kind of, if you're not storing valuable information,
right,
or electronic currency of some sort,
mm-hmm.
then they're just attacking you because they're hoping that maybe you didn't patch last month, and now I can get my botnet software on your machine and end up using your machine as one of 100,000 others to launch a denial of service attack.
Mm-hmm.
But
right. You're just one a mindless number. In the, so the thing that they were saying is that the botnets these days are more interested in Bitcoin mining than they are in locking your files or sending spam swaths of spam email. That the vast majority, and actually the financial, the return on investment for the people who are writing the Bitcoin Trojans and viruses, the background Bitcoin mining Trojans and viruses, are so much higher than the other business models that they're putting more effort and energy into writing better code. And one of the things that they've been doing is they've been actually squashing the other viruses and closing security vulnerabilities.
No,
I wonder if you're seeing this in the wild, because I don't really run enough Windows machines that I could or see it or not.
I don't.
I want to verify this, you know?
From what I've been able to tell, my security practices appear to be effective, and things.
Yeah, that's what, you never say you're sure, because
you
don't
can't
know.
Be.
Right, we had that. We both know of a case where there was a VM running in the background on a server, and nobody caught it for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it happens.
Yeah, and
I think that's what they. If I was attacked, I'm not sure if I was, but if I was attacked, I think they tried to do that to me and it failed. So, but it could just be hardware. It's really hard to tell. So it's not like they put up a sign. I got you.
Yeah.
You know. So I mean, they do that sometimes, but you know, I haven't been hacked in a while. So please don't. I got other things to do, but you know, what I was saying with Isaac is that just patching is usually enough. Like you know, you can do firewall rules, you can watch your logs and you know, carefully craft every single packet that comes in and out of your machine. But just patching is like 3/4 of the way there. If you don't patch, you're dead.
You have to patch and don't do stupid stuff.
Right.
I mean,
don't browse stupid sites.
Don't, when you get the email claiming that they've taken over your computer and they're going to send your browser history to your boss.
Have you gotten one of the ones with one of your old passwords yet? So some database.
I might have gotten one of those, but I tend to get the other ones 2 or 3 times a day.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, there's a flood of those.
Yeah.
Yeah, so one of the latest scams that's going around is the one where, so somebody had a database that I had a password in. It's a really old password.
Yeah.
So I get these emails like, we've hacked your account with like this password from like 2 decades ago. I'm like,
yeah.
Well, you think you've hacked my account.
You know, Yahoo breach.
I'm not fooled by it.
There's so many different places that have been hacked that.
Right.
It's one of the reasons you should use a different password at every website.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I definitely do that. I use variations. I use patterns. But, you know, because it's just impossible to remember one different one for every site.
For me, it kind of depends. But I've been using for the last couple of years a program called KeePass.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll generate a nice long.
Is that the one you recommend to people when they're starting out, or is it hard to use?
See, that's sort of the problem. It's full featured, but because it's full featured, I don't know that it's necessarily the best tool for the novice.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're comfortable with computers, then yeah, use KeePass.
Dude, we have been talking for 1.5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Can you believe it?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah.
It feels like 1.5 hours. It feels like 10 minutes to me. Yeah, it doesn't, right?
It doesn't feel that long.
It
maybe 45 minutes, but
yeah, it's like we're doing great. I think this is awesome. I don't even think we're gonna get to this whole list.
No,
I mean, all right, it's not this whole thing isn't the list. It's just that just to hear, and we've only got half of it done. So yeah. Yeah, Lee has graciously said if it's 11 o'clock and nothing stopped him to stop it before he drops. So, like I said, I couldn't even.
Well, no, the real problem is I have to get back to Queens so I can find parking.
Find parking. Oh, yeah. Yeah, my girlfriend grew up in Astoria, so my wife. It's the last time she was. I have to clarify that, or I'm going to get a beating when I go home. For all I know, they have us on the living room TV right now, and my wife just went, "What? Yeah, I'm talking about you, hon. All right, just chill. All right." Anyway, so all right. Well, that was interesting. If you let me know if you see that, because I you know, apparently they're really good at hiding, and you need to go get the Bitcoin miner tools specifically to wipe them out. I think I had them written down in here.
You know, I'm assuming that most of the Bitcoin mining stuff would probably be trying to exploit the graphics cards processors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what they are doing.
Yeah, so you wouldn't necessarily see the CPU itself being hit.
Mm-hmm. Well, also, one of the things, apparently, they're doing a couple things, and the reason I wanted to pass this along to the viewers and also to you, I was hoping you could tell me about it, but I just found out about it, too, so maybe you're just finding out about it. It's relatively new they started doing this. There's a couple of them that are really advanced that will stop working if you open up a task manager. So, will stop working if there's any keyboard or mouse activity. And will background if, like, you know, if the monitor has a sleep set up,
mm-hmm.
that if it goes out of sleep mode, it'll just shut itself off and wait for sleep mode to come back on before it goes back on again. So anytime you do any kind of investigation, like if human intervention becomes mm-hmm. a factor, it immediately just goes, I'm not here.
Interesting.
Yeah, so you might want to, I don't know.
I mean,
the tools specifically, I think it was Ghost something. It was specifically for looking for ghosts.
On the topic of malicious software and detecting it.
Get more coffee. No, thanks, man. No worries.
You know, people have this tendency to believe that antivirus software, if you have that, you're covered. Don't worry about it.
Right.
That is the worst thing to think.
Right.
You know, 20 years ago, antivirus software probably protected you from about 90% of your problems if
right.
you kept it updated.
Right. Which is, don't go to stupid sites. That's a huge source of problems, too.
But these days, what you can do, if you ever actually, you get spam email that has an attachment to it.
I still use a text mail client.
If you're cautious and you're comfortable,
yeah.
ideally maybe on a machine that you don't consider your main system,
yeah.
download that attachment.
Right.
And then there's a website that you can upload it to that will scan it with about 60 to 70 different antivirus engines.
Really?
Oh, thanks. I'll have to dig up the URL and let you know it. Maybe you can post it. But no, I'm good.
Okay.
But when you do that, when I've done that,
right.
it seems that at best, maybe 10 or 15 catch the malicious software.
Right.
The remainder say, nope, you're good. And it's different products
and it's different ones. Different. Well, so what people don't realize about antivirus and anything. So as time goes on, all the kinds of businesses for computers using the definition model mm-hmm. increase. And the definition model is really a service model, and the quality of service is how effectively it catches a particular definition, and how quickly it's updated.
Mm-hmm.
Speed is the top factor when you're looking at that kind of definition service model. And it's the same model that the cybersecurity guys use for their cybersecurity appliances yeah. to watch the network traffic, that you use for your antivirus, that you use for whitelisting and blacklisting email sites. It's all the same kind of...
When it comes, you know, for somebody at home, ideally you'll get some sort of advanced router that can also do antivirus.
Right.
You'll educate yourself so you don't do stupid things.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll use an antivirus product on that machine. Make sure it stays updated.
Well, I'm missing the perfect question. What's the stupidest thing you've ever seen?
In what regard?
Well, I couldn't say anything, but let's limit it to where somebody just did it to them frickin' selves.
Well, okay, so one of this made me laugh.
Euphemisms, no names.
It was a...
I mean, you can't use names if you want.
It was basically a cartoon. At one time...
Oh, watch the new cartoon, by the way, if you haven't seen the new Technocrat Live cartoon.
At one client, this client had put their employees through security training.
Mm-hmm.
And the security training then gave them a certificate for completion.
Okay.
One person at this particular client had their certificate up on the wall, and surrounding that certificate, various post-it notes with passwords.
Huh. Oh my god.
Are you kidding me?
Dude, did you take a picture?
I don't think so, and I probably thought about doing it.
That would be a spectacular meme.
Because...
I'm gonna fabricate that just to make a meme out of it.
Because I was, if I had taken a picture, I would technically be copying their passwords.
Right. Frickin' responsible admin. Isaac would have done the right thing. Isaac would have taken one for the team and been like, you guys need to learn a lesson here.
I'm pretty sure
I'm going to invite all my friends into your computer.
I'm pretty sure I went to my contact there and said, do you realize that this person has done that?
By the way, I just want to say thank you so much. It was Lee's idea to have Isaac be my first guest, and that was spot on. He was perfect for the show, and I'm ashamed. I didn't think of it myself. So my special ability is to just constantly talk and constantly bring up new subjects so that to keep the conversation flowing. Well, but, you know, like sometimes the broader strategy kind of eludes me. So that was
it's kind of
it's
like,
really smart.
For me, it's kind of like Icon. I always kind of felt like I did my best work behind the scenes.
Right. You know? You're doing great out here, man. So don't sell yourself short. Yeah. You're that's a good story though. I can't believe that. I mean, at least if you put it under your keyboard,
yeah.
Someone has to get physical access. They can't just use the zoom in feature on their camera to God. All right. Anyway. And I just wanted to say also, I'm ruthlessly stealing from you, so I hope you're not mad. So Lee and
should I check my wallet? Yeah.
My robots have been working on your wallet as we speak. No, so Lee and I actually have worked together before, and at one point he was my boss, and at one point I was. Well, kind of, right? You interviewed me.
Yeah, I mean,
technically I was your boss, but it, like, you kind of were leaving.
No, I think I left before that.
You left as it was happening, right? You know? It was like right, or maybe
Bart
you left.
Bart was still my boss at the time, and he was still your boss, as I understood it.
Really?
Yeah.
It must have happened right after that. Damn it! So I wasn't your boss?
No.
So, well, I guess you're not admitting you were mine either, so.
Yeah. Right. I'm not admitting that. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. So you asked me an interview question, and it is the best question. And I feel bad because people are. It's so good to ambush someone with, and if someone's prepared for it, they can answer it a little bit better. But in a way, it's not so bad because it might actually make everybody more knowledgeable. It's your computer question. It's how many computers do you have at home? How many computers are you running at home? And I've been asking guests that. You gave me this list of questions that I could possibly ask guests, and they're great. Mm-hmm. And I even asked you a couple of them. Mm-hmm. I hope you're not mad at me for. I keep trying to find something you're mad at me for, so we can.
I don't generally get angry with people.
It's good because you're pretty big. You know, I don't know if you can catch it on camera,
the last time that I got significantly angry,
you're definitely in the Yeti class. You'd be heavyweight. So,
it was probably 5 or 6 years ago. I don't quite know.
Did you rip his arms off?
No, but sometime before then, I also came close to pushing over a refrigerator. But
was it like a mini fridge?
No.
Or was it like a walk-in
nice
freezer?
Tall.
Because a walk-in freezer would be pretty impressive.
Well, no, not that big. But I just, you know, it doesn't make sense. I just
why not get mad? Don't you feel better?
Why get mad?
Yeah.
I just have this tendency, if somebody does something that royally pisses me off,
yeah,
then, look, if it's a complete stranger, there's nothing you can really do about it.
Right.
And if it's somebody you know,
right?
Usually it gets filed away.
Right. Well, there's that fucking friendship thing again, where you give people some latitude.
And for the most part, if it gets filed
nefarious
away, I mean, you know, it kind of depends on what it really was that they did.
Mm-hmm.
Odds are, I let it go. But if it was something that, you know, it just, I don't know. Somebody does something that, I won't recommend people for jobs. I will recommend some people, I won't recommend others.
Right.
Because.
Well, you can.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really, I just had this, you know, I just recommended someone for a job, but it's terrifying recommending for someone for a job because whatever they do, even if it's only a small amount, reflects on you. So if they do great, you look good. But if they go in and they tear the place up, you look like a fool.
Where we worked, I recommended how many people? 1, 2, 3, 4 At least 4 different people who ended up getting jobs there.
Nice.
5 if you count the one guy who sort of temped for a few days.
Okay. That counts. Because that can, you know, for what we're saying, that
6 if you think about the other guy who was more of a student intern.
Wow. You're like the HR department.
I know. But at the same time,
a man behind the scenes.
At the same time, I recommend people who I feel will reflect well on me, because it's my reputation at stake too.
Right. Well, you more so than like I haven't really done the consulting thing. I haven't ruled it out. I'm not ready to commit to it either. But I've basically worked, you know, full time, salary day jobs. Mm-hmm. That's been my career. And you know, you can screw up a little because you can make up for it over time. But you know, they can't. If you give a bad recommendation, they could fire you for it, but I've never heard of that before.
Yeah, no.
But if you do that with a client,
well, if you do,
you know, things are less permanent. It's easier for them to get a little revenge and go, your reputation matters more.
See,
I think. I don't know. Is that wrong?
I think if you do it with an employer, you run the risk of demonstrating having a poor judge of character, which, if you have any potential advancement, mm-hmm. can make that questionable.
Right.
At least it would with me.
Well, you can be wildly successful as a geek and not have any people under you.
Yeah.
You know, if you're a senior, blah, blah, blah.
But do you want to be a...
You know, you can be making, pulling in 6 figures easy and like,
if you enjoy, and I'm not saying that I don't, but if you enjoy working with the technology mm-hmm. and programming, fixing it, setting it up, whatever it is that you do, if you really enjoy that and you don't really have a strong desire to be in management,
right,
then fine.
Yeah. Well, so the thing that people don't realize about management is that, yeah, sure, you might make a little more money. Actually, first of all, you don't always make more money. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you get paid the same.
Yeah.
Which is completely crazy, because what I'm going to say next, which is that in management, you're getting that higher pay to reflect your higher risk. You know, you may get into a Kobayashi Maru, yes, got to bring it up again, you know, like a no-win situation, and you're just out of luck. You know, you're going down with the ship. You're the captain. You're the last one off, and it's going down fast. You're probably not going to make it. And you may tank your career as a manager. You know, of course, if people above you are making bad decisions, sure, but they can lie.
Yeah.
They can dig after, you know, when their reputations are on, you know, are on, at stake, they can just lie about it. So, you know, that management isn't really the panacea. You know, a lot of people want to be managers, and it's like, yeah, if you're a good manager, you don't really want it because it kind of sucks. Like, if like that, it's like wanting the job disqualifies you from being good at it. You know? I mean, I'm not saying people shouldn't be ambitious. I'm just saying there is an element of that.
But my point is, if you have ambition, then you don't want to you don't want to demonstrate, especially repeatedly, poor judgment, especially poor judgment of people.
Right.
You know, if you're going to be put in a position to hire people.
So many geeks do that, though.
If you're going to be put in a position to hire people,
right.
You don't want to have a track record of recommending bad choices.
I mean, there are definitely wildly successful computer geeks out there who are flat out mentally ill. You know,
yeah.
I mean, not kind of, sort of. Like, they don't even, like, admit it because they can't even deny it anymore. But their employers don't care because they probably do care. They probably would like to get rid of them. But they're one of the most, they're usually a senior guy. They're one of the most brilliant people on the team. And they're not easy to replace.
Yeah.
And, you know, and they do the work well enough that they're like, well, you know, we can't help it if we did that crazy thing.
To your point, though, of being different with clients
mm-hmm.
and having a poor recommendation with clients.
Nice, you remembered that. I was lost. I just completely gone.
It's
over the horizon for me.
It depends on how long you've worked for them and what you're bringing the person in for.
Yeah.
And what kind of track record you have with the client.
Mm-hmm.
I I don't know, for better or worse, I probably hedge when I recommend people. It's like, look, you know, I think this person does well at this, that, and the other thing. But if they have a weakness, it's probably this.
It's not really hedging if you're telling them what your experiences are.
Yeah.
So that's wise. I think that's really smart. I don't think it's hedging, though. Hedging's like, well, my experiences with them were good, but who knows? Right? You know, hedging is, you know, you're saying, I only interacted with them in this environment. I saw them do these things. They did them well. I have no reason to think that they're going to be bad at this. Mm-hmm. That's different. That's just, you know, being honest, telling the whole truth. Right? Telling the whole truth versus wild speculation on the negative side. It's hard to hedge in that. I don't know. Maybe just semantics. But keep going.
The other thing is that if you do lose a client over it, as opposed to losing a job, it's not that worrisome.
Really?
Well, I wouldn't be gulping.
Really? Yeah, I'd be worried that I would, like, you know.
Look, yeah, if it's a huge client, I've lost huge clients twice.
What? Wow.
And
you're
not
tough.
Not through any of my own doing.
Is it financial management? Is that what it is? Like managing your personal finances so you don't have to worry?
That would be helpful.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's always helpful. Well, that's such a non-answer. Come on, man.
The first client I lost was, and I didn't lose them per se, but
right.
They went away.
Ah.
That might be a better way to put it.
That's fine. You don't have to be too detailed.
No, the first one ended up closing up shop.
Right.
I worked for them for...
Business models change. Just like marriages.
5 years.
Right.
5 years, and they just shut down.
Yeah.
And that was a client that I was doing about 18 to 20 hours a week at.
Right.
So that had a significant impact on my
that
income.
That sucks, man. I think you remember me telling you about that.
But then...
Fortunately, you owned your car outright at the time. I know that. Or were you still making payments?
Was that the year? No, that was... That one, I was still paying off my car.
That must have been scary.
But about 3 months later...
Yeah.
I picked up another client, mm-hmm. thanks to somebody I used to work with. And I worked with them for... What was it? Probably another 4 to 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I lost them, they sold the division to another company, and 9 months later, the other company was like, oh, no more consultants.
Wow.
3 months after that, they let my contact go as well. So.
Oh, okay.
And that one ended up being...
Your mole.
That one ended up being about 9 months of lacking a major client. It was also really bad timing.
Oh, that sucks.
Because later that month,
mm-hmm.
I lost another client for a similar reason.
Was it the economy or was it just randomness?
I think it was just randomness.
Wow.
I had another client that... It was kind of funny. The first one ended while I was actually at a Microsoft conference in Seattle in November.
Mm-hmm.
Early November, I got the call from the guys like, yeah, they said no more consultants. I can't use you anymore.
Okay.
Okay. Well, nothing I could do about that, so okay. Month later, I get a call from one of my clients saying, hey, could you stop by the office the next couple of days? Sure. I go in, and he said, close the door. Like, just don't tell me you're merging with somebody else or being acquired. Something like that. He's like, we're basically merging with somebody else.
No!
So in 1 month...
The first thing to go is the consultants. Yep.
And it was a much larger company that they were merging into.
Right. Yeah.
So now they weren't a huge revenue for me.
Right.
But when you take them in combination with the 30-day earlier departure,
mm-hmm.
that hurt.
Yeah, that sucks.
But
I've been thinking about if I went into I haven't committed to it, but if I went into the consulting business as a primary revenue stream, I was telling my wife, I'm like, you got to work because we need the I don't know if I'm as disciplined as you. I mean, I don't know if I'm as disciplined to have...
I'm not disciplined.
You're not? I think you are. I think you are more than you realize.
Maybe okay. more than I realize, but I also kind of
think... Well, most people are extremely irresponsible. Most people have... They literally live paycheck to paycheck, and they can't afford a... I think the stats came out. They can't afford a $500 bump. Like, if they have a $500 bill that they're not expecting, they're done.
Look, the thing about consulting for me is I've gotten... And even when I lost those clients, you know, yeah, I lost a big chunk of income.
Yeah.
And occasionally I've lost smaller clients and lost a little chunk of income. Mm. But I've never been unemployed.
Okay.
And I've always had an income.
Ooh, I'm unemployed unless you give me money, and then I'm technically employed. There's a Bitcoin address on the website. Anyway.
But, I mean, I would still Bitcoin. Encourage you. Look, I don't...
I'm not saying I'm not going to do it. If, you know me. If I commit and I say I'm doing this, I will do it. But, you know, whatever, man. I'm still sparrowing.
But, you know, to some extent, though, I'm kind of a hybrid, I think, of you right now.
In that, why,
yes,
you?
I'm working, but... In reality, you know, I look at my own stuff, and look, the last 12 months for me have been among the busiest I've ever had.
All right, congratulations.
I like it, and I hate it.
Right.
And at the same time...
Have you thought about culling and just knocking off the least productive, least paying client so that you could... I mean, I'm not saying it has to be... It could be any one of the bottom... You know, something from the bottom.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it was several years ago I actually decided I was going to basically not look for and generally cut out home users.
Right.
Especially early on, I had done a few.
Oh, my God. But. It's the worst. All right, so this is thing that happens to techs. And I'm sure... See, it's even worse for you because I have a good out. People will say, oh, you know about computers? Can you fix my computer? I'll be like, I'm kind of a Linux server guy. Not really a Windows desktop guy. You know, I probably could fix it. But, you know, mm-hmm. You didn't hear that. I don't want to... No. No, I'm not fixing your desktop. So, you know, and like, but you can't deny it. I mean, you really can't deny that you know the desktop stuff because there's at least some crossover with the server stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, if someone came in with a Linux desktop problem, it would be more relevant to, you know, that's awful. Wow. The public is terrible to us. Why do they hate us like this? I don't want to be the one to tell you, hey, you shouldn't have gone to that website. I looked at your history and I could see where this all started. You know, that's a brutal conversation.
And yeah, you know, I have seen, I still have essentially one home user that I do help out.
No. Oh. Well, you're nice.
He's been with me for probably since before I started doing consulting full time.
Right.
And
that okay.
Yeah.
Nice guy. He just got grandfathered in. I get it.
I'm pretty sure he is a grandfather. You know.
Right.
But yeah, I still help him out from time to time. I'd say probably 2 to 3 visits a year, but that's about it.
Well, that's good. At least you keep your skills up in that space.
But I there's not many clients that I would really want to get rid of. There are some that I'm less concerned about losing if they decided that, you know, we're going to go a different direction. And my client base is also a little bit eclectic in that, you know, most IT consultants that I know work for small businesses. And that is technically true that I work for small businesses, but I would say half of my clients are other consultants who I go to help them out with problems that they're not comfortable fixing. Comfortable, knowledgeable, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe it's a little bit of one with this one, a little bit of the other with that one, but some of the guys are more desktop-oriented, not server-oriented.
Mm-hmm.
I even have a couple of clients out of state.
Mm-hmm.
One guy in Missouri.
Wow. Have you ever had to travel to another state to do support, or were you able to always do it remote?
Not terribly far. Like, in other words, I've been to a client in Connecticut, been to a client in Jersey.
Right. I mean, because in the, you know, in the business world, there's tons of stories about guys flying all over the place.
Yeah.
Other side of the planet if necessary.
I wouldn't mind, but at the other, on the other hand, I would definitely wouldn't want to cover the expense myself.
Right.
And for what I do, vast majority of it I can do through remote access.
Would you bill that?
The travel?
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I would too.
You know, I've had in my agreements with clients here.
I found the thing. Sorry, keep going. We have a thing for this. There, now it's, oh no, no, I'm wrong. Okay, keep going.
I've had in my agreements with certain clients statements that, look, I'll travel a certain amount at no charge, but if I'm going particular distance or if I'm a particular distance from home at the end of the day, you're covering a hotel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fine. That sounds good.
So,
yeah, you know, I don't know. I feel like I might, I don't want to, like, I'd be afraid to, like, just bring this stuff up constantly. You know, like, I got bad news, you owe me some money. I got bad news, you owe me some money.
Oh, no, I hate billing clients. I absolutely hate billing clients.
Really?
I'm horrible at it.
Really?
I can go,
I don't know, man. You, like, scare me when you say prices. Like, you know, not because the prices are scary, but just because you have this force of you. There is a bill coming. You must be prepared.
You know, I think most clients understand that, hey, they're hiring me to do a job.
You know what?
They're going to pay me.
Maybe this is my crazy thing, because I had a crazy experience when I was first starting as an admin. I had been working for a consulting company which rented me out to other companies, and apparently they weren't totally forthcoming about the rate. So I went and worked for a company who was having problems with DNS, and I worked there for like 2-3 weeks. And then the bill came, and they went, bye. Before, the day before, they were totally thrilled, and they got the bill, and they went, oh my God, this is insane, and just, you know, got rid of me. So maybe I need to have more consulting experience, and then I'll be able to average it out and be less paranoid about people not wanting to pay in
non-payment.
You know,
some things that I've learned over the years. Mm-hmm. When I first started consulting, even before I left my day job.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any advice for people who are starting consulting? What would be like a 3-item list that you could give to people?
So item number one is go to expertsexchange.com and look at my article on how much you should charge, or something to the effect of.
Your number one is a long list of other number ones.
Well, no, it is actually
You're such a geek, man. No huge function. I'm looking for 1, 2, 3.
It's
too complicated to put in 1, 2, 3, huh?
How much you should charge as an IT consultant.
Oh, okay. All right, yeah.
And it,
so think about how much you're going to charge, right?
It basically breaks down to consider how much you're going to work,
mm-hmm.
how much you'd like to make, what your expenses are.
Mm-hmm. Cost analysis, yeah.
Yeah.
And learn how to do a cost analysis. So it's not even this. It's not even how much to charge. It's learn cost analysis.
I wrote this thing, I think it was in 2009, and I don't know what the stats are on it now, but for a very long time, it was a number 2 article on the site.
I can't spell.
Anyway, yeah. And it basically breaks down, and the short of it is, given what I consider to be reasonable numbers, and I think most people would too.
Okay.
In 2009, it came out to about $120 an hour.
Okay. So...
So,
but it's probably changed. Inflation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And not to mention, you know, it depends on what
you're
doing.
Numbers. Don't do that. Don't do that to yourself. But right, it's going to also be different depending on where you're working.
Your level of expertise.
Your level of expertise, your experience.
Yeah.
You know, what kind of network you have. If you have a whole company of other consultants behind you, so you can, you know, your responsiveness.
So.
Which you kind of do.
There's, yeah. A few years back, I was doing a little bit of work for another consultant who really wanted to hire me.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, nah, I really want to stay independent.
Right.
And he had like 3 or 4 other technicians working for him. And he's like, look, you know, join me. We'll make you a good deal. And because what I'm going to do,
mm-hmm.
if I'm competing against you, I'm going to point out to the client that, hey, I've got multiple technicians who can help you out. Mm-hmm. Versus me, who, you know, he's just the one guy.
Hey.
If he's got an emergency, he can't help you out.
Okay.
And my argument against that is, yeah, you know what, I'm the one guy, but I've also networked with about 20 other consultants, and if there's a problem and I can't make it to a client, then it's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
I'll call one of them up. They'll make it.
Okay.
You know, the coverage is not an issue. I was in Iceland over the summer, and one of my clients had a problem. I called up another one of the consultants who I know worked nearby. Hey, can you go take care of him?
So maybe that's number two, is build up a network of pinch hitters. So number two is network of pinch hitters.
You have to socialize with people, with other consultants. Look, if you're in the middle of nowhere in Iowa or Montana or some other place that there's no one around for 200 miles besides the 12 people in your little town,
mm-hmm.
if you got two guys doing consulting work, it might be a little difficult to network with them because, you know, one guy could easily steal your business and you don't have any business anymore. But in New York, at least,
mm-hmm.
talk to people. There's so much business around. If you're a real scumbag, then you're going to steal somebody's client. Otherwise, you're just going to work with them. You're going to call them up when you're on vacation. They're going to call you up when they're on vacation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just...
Yeah.
Network.
Okay. So we got two so far. So one is learn cost analysis. Two is network pinch hitters. Network other consultants, you know.
Yeah.
Other consultants. So what's number three?
Oh.
What's the one thing that people would not see coming?
Well, one thing I tell people to do is when what I do for myself, everything you do for a client,
mm-hmm.
bill it.
Bill everything.
Everything.
Awesome. Bill everything. Nice.
However, that does not mean that you charge them for everything.
I find this confusing. Explain.
So, if you're at a client and you're doing something and maybe you want to be nice, you want to do a nice little comp the client, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
then offer a discount. Pick a day where you're there for an hour and just say, you know, I was there for that hour,
mm-hmm.
did this work, line right below that, discount, 1 hour's worth of work.
Okay. That's great. So you're offering them a sale.
And you're showing them that you're not necessarily charging them for everything.
Right.
You know, attorneys are known to, like, bill you for everything. Call them up and for 3 minutes and you get a bill.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
I always ask. I would say, what exactly am I being, how, I got to say something in 1 minute, and then if you want, you can start charging me, you know.
And for the most part, that's like the one thing I don't really bill for is
right.
phone calls.
Right.
If it's a quick phone call.
Yes.
If I hop on something remotely.
So in the salary world, 5 to 10 minutes. You know, if it's more than 10 minutes, I'm consulting.
Well,
I'm consulting or it's part of the job. It's overtime, you know.
Yeah. And if, like, I don't like charging my regular clients for phone calls if it's just like, hey, you know, we're trying to do this, and I walk them through something on the phone.
Right.
Especially if maybe I'm sitting at home and at that particular hour not really doing anything.
Right.
Then, okay, you know, I'm not even going to list that. Or if I do list that, I list it and then I discount it to zero.
Mm-hmm.
Because it just makes people, in my opinion at least, it make me feel better when I look at a bill and I see, okay, well, I have these items, but you know what? That was it was zeroed out and that was zeroed out. So, okay, you know, it's nice to see that zero. The other thing, I kind of use that as leverage in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's rare that I've ever had to enforce it, but what I mean by leverage is like, look, you're going to pay me on time.
Right.
Because if you don't pay me on time, that discount is void.
Right, right. You were doing them a favor, and you're going to stop doing them a favor.
Yeah.
Right.
I'll do you a favor, you do me a favor. Pay me on time.
That alliance is two ways. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got it. All right, so we got this is great. So I don't know if you meant to do this when you came on here, but we now have a three-step list. Is there another one I'm missing? Do we need a fourth step?
Well, there's sort of a business model. And these days, the break-fix model.
Yeah. No. Service model, you see, a monthly charge. Okay.
And there are various ways of doing that. I know one.
So four is set up a service model.
One of the consultants I know, will actually do kind of a hybrid where they charge a minimum monthly fee and then bill by the hour.
Mm-hmm.
That's a consideration.
I mean, this is a big... So people may not realize, you know, like, people don't think about the fact that you... I know you, so I know this, that you were... At one point, you were just another salaried worker, just like the rest of, you know, the bulk of IT. Some are consultants, but a lot are salaried. So, and you made the jump into consulting, and you just figured it out. And I mean, I think that's really impressive. I don't know if someone else, but you know, sometimes people want to make that jump. So,
one of the points on the service model, and one of the arguments for it, it's considered to being a managed service provider.
Right.
And there's a bunch of different ones kind of related to that now, but. One of the ideas is you're paying a flat fee every month, and generally speaking, it's an all-you-can-eat kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you may have certain asterisks, if you will, like, I'm not going to replace every computer in your office 1 month and have it be covered by this all-you-can-eat fee.
Right.
But if you want to replace one a month over the course of 12 months, okay, maybe that'll include.
So there's an expected window.
Yeah.
Of serviceability. Not I'm going to do everything for everything in the month, but maybe 10% of your infrastructure is serviceable in a month, or
is replaceable in a month,
or 8% or something.
But
like
you
that.
Know, look, if you get infected by something and it was missed by our antivirus,
But how about blame? Is that part of the model too? I mean, do you ever blame yourself? You know, if you blow it, obviously you don't blow it because you're making this face like, blow it. I do not understand this mistake you were speaking of.
That's sort of the MSP model.
I mean, I believe
model.
It. You're pretty with it, so.
That's sort of the MSP model because if you think about motivations when it comes to being a consultant.
Right.
If you're on the break fix model.
Right.
Then if you do your job well.
Nothing ever breaks. You're punished for doing a good job.
Yeah.
Well, it's the same thing with system administrators and system engineers. Their job is to replace themselves, and programmers even sometimes.
But not even just that. But if you're less scrupulous,
mm-hmm.
and like everybody, every consultant I know these days has some form of remote access tool for their clients,
mm-hmm.
because they need to be able to take care of the problem whenever and wherever.
Your glass fell over.
Kind of. Yeah, no. Look, it's been a slow month.
And by the way,
let me remote into that machine.
If I ever caught someone doing that on either in my business as a consultant, you know, either working with me or working for my client, I would totally fire their ass.
Absolutely.
But, you know, lying, that's the problem.
Yeah.
Because you have to trust the people you work with.
Yep.
You gotta trust your team, or you're just screwed.
But so, if you're on the break fix model, then at the very least, there is an arguable incentive to cause harm or prolong the work.
Right. Oh, I've never seen that.
Whereas, if you're on the managed service providers model,
God, you'd think it was like 1970 Chicago's unions out there sometimes in some of the places I've worked. You know, just like people dragging their feet and like, I don't want to do it. And it's bad. You have to want to be motivated because people just like they drag you down, and you're like, all right, well, you know, I'm just going to take this slow because everyone else is, and I can't do anything without this, you know, this thing from guy A. And this thing from woman B, and this guy mm-hmm. thing from guy C. So I'm just going to take my time too, and it's infectious.
It
that's what DevOps is really about, and now SRE.
Well,
getting away from that.
If you're on the managed service model, then you're incentivized to make the system as stable and reliable as possible.
Right.
Because let's say you bill a client $1,000 a month to keep their systems running. If you can keep their systems running by spending 2 hours a month, you've made $500 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
But if you screw up and it takes you 40 hours, mm-hmm. you've made $25 an hour.
You've gotten the Mickey Mouse salary you deserved.
Not to mention that the client has been unable to work for 40 hours,
right?
Presumably.
Well, the good thing, so the thing that's tough about that is then you have to learn how to say no to your client.
Yeah.
You have to get to the point where you can go,
and
yeah, you want me to do that, but that's crazy, and I'm not going
to
do that.
The managed service model is something that you really need to look at, and there's several books on,
mm-hmm.
but it's there's so many ways that you can do it, and you do have to be a little careful, and there's potential for client abuse. You know, I pay you a flat fee. I want you to be here for to show me why Word isn't printing properly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you put in certain restrictions.
Is
certain
four going to be enough, or do I need a bigger board? Is this enough to get someone started?
I think those are the big things to be aware of.
So this is the list. Number one, learn cost analysis, or how much to charge. Number two, network pinch hitters or other consultants. Number three, bill everything. And number four, set up a service model or a managed service model.
Yeah, you cannot be a god of the topic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you think about how you pay...
Go on.
If you think about how you pay an attorney...
Right.
You know, you need an attorney to defend you in court or to sue somebody, whatever the case is.
Right.
They do not guarantee a win.
Mm-hmm.
And...
Well, there is a system where they do everything that's possible, which is retainer.
Yeah.
But it ain't cheap, and maybe you don't want that.
But, you know... They don't guarantee you wins,
right?
No matter what.
Right, true.
And what you're basically paying the attorney for is their knowledge and knowing where to look.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Knowing the knowns and knowing the unknown unknowns.
Yeah. In essence.
Yeah.
And
yeah, knowing where to look. And that's one of the things I was complimenting you earlier on, that you're really good at. And I try to be good at that too. Even if I don't know what something is, I try to have a network of people, some of which you're meeting now, that I can call on and say, help me, I don't know what to do.
I'm probably butchering the example, but I think another one of the consultants I know tells a story about going into a place. I don't think this has actually happened. I think it's more of an anecdote, but
mm-hmm.
Going into a place that they've said, hey, there's a problem with my server.
Right.
Walks in, looks at the server, pushes a button, and now everything works, and mm-hmm. he leaves. Sends him a bill for $200.
Mm-hmm.
And the client calls up, you were here for 30 seconds. Give me a bill for $200?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I knew what button to push.
Yeah, fair enough.
You know, if it were that easy.
I have a perfect anecdote about that. So like I mentioned before, there's a cartoon up now for the channel. So this is actually kind of a cool story. It's an open source program called OpenTunes. And it just open sourced in 2016. So I had to teach myself this app. And it took me a week to make a 45-second cartoon. But the next cartoon will be 2 days. Those first 3 days of work, we're just learning it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, $200 is cheap compared to that. I get paid a lot an hour, you know. Yeah. So if I were doing this as a job for someone, it would have cost so much. You know, so, yeah, you're absolutely right. That was a great story. Thanks a lot for telling. And I think this list will help a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
There was a few more things. Are you still good to go for a little while longer? We are actually, we're past 10.
Yeah.
You're not going to turn into a pumpkin or spontaneously.
I can be president? Oh, not that kind of a pumpkin. Never mind.
I was going to say spontaneously combust, but actually that's even funnier. I'm an independent, all right, just for the record. So I do like good jokes, though.
So do I, just not in office.
Just not. what was I going to ask you? Oh, I remember. So I wanted to say something about, I wanted to include something in this show about the last show. So last show I kind of stalled out when I was talking to Rich, and I just kind of went, duh, because I forked one too many times. I'm trying to avoid the segue word. Segue. Yeah, segue. Isaac set up a shtick with segues. You'll see it. Anyway, I segued one too many times, and I wasn't able to talk about what I wanted to talk about. And now I realize, when that happens to me, it's because I've hit an identity. I've hit a divide by zero error. So that's what's really going on. A verbal identity. I got to come up with a word for that too, because that's not a good enough explanation. But you get the concept, right? So what actually happened was, I was talking about tiered steganography. So for people who don't know what steganography is, it's the art of hiding messages inside of other formats, whether it's inside of a packet or inside of an image or inside of a movie. But the steganography, while it isn't that common if you go back, because it wasn't easy to automate the decryption or the revelation of the steganographic idea, what I was trying to say is that if you are trying to service a group of people and trying to teach people at different levels who are all part of the same group, like different levels of intelligence, different levels of experience, different ages, different interests, different aptitudes, whatever it is, that if you use tiered steganography, you can have the same exact message or information teaching different people different things. And this is kind of, it's a little bit advanced, this concept, but this is kind of what I try to do at LILUG. And I keep it simpler because I can't go up there and give every talk. But what I do is, what I tell the speakers when they come in is to talk about, first make it really easy, then make it a little harder, and make it a little harder, and by the end of the talk, you should be talking at your level or above it, so that the experts in the audience will get something out of it. So that way, everyone in the room, no matter what their level, gets something of it. That's the simplest case of like a tiered learning. So with tiered steganography, what it is the tiers are actually embedded in each other, and that messages are being passed to different groups of people at the same time. So a poet might be actually using some kind of tiered steganography as an example. So a person who is shallow might read one thing, and a person who is very caring and empathetic might read another. Like, what's that song, you know? I bet you think this song is about you. You know, you're so vain, right?
Okay.
Yeah, right? So
Star Suckers?
One... What?
Star Suckers?
Yeah, yeah. Though that was actually pulled from another song, a pop song in the 80s. I forgot what it was called. But yes, Nine Inch Nails also used those lines in Star Suckers. But that's a perfect example of tiered steganography.
By Carly Simon?
Yeah, that's probably right. Yeah, it was like late 70s, early 80s. And different people will hear different things when they hear that song. If you're not vain, you're going to be like, oh, yeah, I know that kind of person. And if you are vain, you go, well, fucking, I bet it is about me, you bastard. Right? So that's the concept I was trying to express. So... I now have a new thing. If I get stuck, it's because I've broken, because I've found a concept that I don't have a word for. So hopefully I won't have to do that again.
Okay.
Sorry. I know that's not, it's the Lee show, but I just had to get that in there, because if you're watching every episode, I know for a fact that Rich is watching me. He said YouTube went down, but I hope that's not, that was about when I got beeped 20 minutes ago.
No, it's good.
It's good? Okay.
We're looking right now.
Yeah, okay. So maybe he's the problem between the keyboard and the user, you know, between the keyboard
picnic
and the chair.
Error?
Yeah, yeah. What was that again?
Problem in chair, not in computer.
Yes,
picnic.
Yes. Yeah, picnic. Okay. Yeah. And Rich is a smart guy, so I'm sure it was no picnic.
So it wasn't an ID10T problem.
No, definitely not an ID10T. It might be a picnic, but not an ID10T. Wow, we're giving away some secrets here, man. Don't look at the tickets. Do not read the codes on the tickets. We talk about users. It happens. You go crazy if you don't. You lose your mind. So, there were some other things you asked here. I don't know. I don't want to open a can that we can't close. Hey, I'll give you a choice. So you mentioned some possible topics, cutting the cord. Why does medicine suck? And I have a question: how do brainstorms work? So, which of these would you like to talk about?
Probably not the brainstorms, because I wouldn't know where to begin with that.
Yeah, okay. I was just curious, if you have... Okay, so we won't do that one. I'll probably just ask every guest until somebody gives me it.
It just...
It's in the meat space. It's the meat blob inside your skull, and you're not.
For me, I don't know that I really have.
Do you brainstorm ever?
I don't know that I really have brainstorms. It's more like, you know, the...
Well, you don't have... I mean, it's not
like... The occasional brain shower.
I'm not talking about an epilepsy attack on your couch because you watched one, you know, the movie was too flashy. I'm talking about writing a bunch of stuff down on a paper to try to figure out...
Yeah, for me...
Trying to get in your head, man.
For me, it's not storms. I had a little notebook for many of these things that...
Right.
I just walked around for the last week going, oh, yeah, that topic.
Right. Right. Okay.
You know, or hearing somebody talk about something which reminded me of something else, and oh, that topic.
Okay. So it's just like a perpetual trickle, rather than it's like a drizzle. It's like a day long drizzle.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there could be the occasional stream of consciousness, but it just.
I mean, sometimes brainstorms are incredibly dumb. I mean, I've been in, especially in ones in meetings where people who are not necessarily good at it are trying to combine forces as some kind of, you know, defective superhero.
for me, it's more like, yeah, storms, no. Maybe the occasional epiphany, like when it came to the programming that we kind of started with.
Yeah.
You know, for 18, 20 years, I'm like, most of my programs are very linear. They just start here and they go to here. And maybe in a couple of spots, I have functions or subroutines for repetitive code. But for the most part, it just starts and ends, and that's that. And looking at this other guy's code for a particular script he wrote, even though it was in a language I didn't necessarily understand well, it was just a long series of functions and subroutines that this does that, this does the other thing, and at the bottom, one line that just starts the dominoes falling.
Right.
And it when I saw that, it was like, this is how you can have multiple people writing programs.
Right.
Because
the compartmentalization you're talking about.
If you're writing,
you had a eureka about the compartmentalization.
Yeah, if you're writing code and it just goes top to bottom and that's that, how do you have a second person joining you in writing that code?
So this is true, but actually this is also where people get into trouble. Like from what I can program. I'm not a wizard.
I'm not saying I'm a wizard at this point. I just think I have enough of an understanding to actually maybe call myself a programmer.
So now, I would dare say that no matter how good you are, there's somebody better.
Oh,
it
yeah.
really is just like,
oh, yeah.
it's like that.
No,
the bigger you are, the harder you fall. No matter how bad you think you are, there's always somebody
back,
who can fight a little harder, a little faster.
Let me go back, at least with technology. Look, I like to think I know a lot. But I also will say that I know that everyone in any given room that I'm in knows something I don't.
Right.
Because especially these days, technology is so complicated
right.
that I can't see everything. I can't know everything.
Well, it's very wise. A lot of people are not that wise.
Yeah.
And they're just not, they don't get it. You know, they think that they know everything. And all I got to say to those people is, freaking Linus Torvald wrote Linux, and even if you hate Linux and think it's stupid, he wrote Git, which everybody uses, which is the code management tool that everybody uses now to replace the entire business running a code management tool, which wasn't quite good enough for him. So he moved along and wrote another thing. And the dude installs Red Hat. That's his distro. He doesn't do it from scratch. He doesn't know everything. He just goes, install. Mm-hmm. And then he sets up his directory and does his work in his directory. And so, you know, if he doesn't do that, if this guy who has created these world-changing tools, if you say you do that, you're very special, but you might be a little bit crazy. Or you might be wrong. Mm-hmm. You just don't know everything. So... And feel free to say,
actually
mention in the comments if you do know everything, because I'd like to have you on the show.
Let's go back to that list and add a number 5.
Okay. Oh, a number 5.
Yeah.
Okay.
This, I think, is actually kind of important.
All right. See, now I need another board. Give me your board.
Is it
the zeroth rule? Should it be number 0? No, go ahead.
Maybe.
All right.
When I first started consulting, I had the perspective that people are hiring me to know the answer and fix the problem.
Right.
And going back to the attorney route, you don't. You can't. Maybe you know where to look. If Windows is crashing.
Right.
You can look at why it's crashing. Maybe you can figure out why it's crashing.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe you can't.
So it's more about solving the problem than knowing the answer.
It's about getting the customer working again.
Mm-hmm. Solve the problem.
You know, I could spend 8, 10, 12, 16 hours going over a particular issue trying to figure out why is this happening.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't build a client for that.
Mm-hmm.
So at some point, and I'll tell you, when you're doing consulting work, it's got to be earlier than later. At some point, you have to look at that and say, look, is it reasonable for me to believe that I'm going to be able to fix this problem in the case of Windows, say, hour to 2 hours? Or, depending where the problem is, would it make more sense for me to just wipe the machine and reload it?
I'm kidding. I didn't really snap it.
Maybe that's empty.
Number six, don't sniff markers. Sorry.
You know, you need to be able to tell the client, look, I can keep working on this, but I don't know that I'm going to solve this quickly.
Right.
And I have to bill you for it.
Right. Is this a fair assessment of this? Solve the problem over knowing the answer. Yeah, solving the problem is a priority.
Yeah.
All right, so that's number five. That's some good advice. All right. Do you want to finish it up there, or do you want to tackle one of my more? Want to solve the problems of the planet?
What was the other things you had?
So So I'm going to take one out because we kind of just said no to that. So the ones that are interesting to me are cutting the cord.
Okay.
Why medicine sucks, or one thing that you actually brought up in a couple of different ways, so maybe this is the answer, is transparent society. So you didn't say transparent society,
okay,
but you're talking about privacy and the lack of privacy. So were you more interested in talking about privacy or medicine or just buying the farm and quitting
so
IT?
Not that
I would know anything about that.
Let's kind of go with the medicine.
Okay, fine, fair enough.
Which can kind of touch on privacy.
Okay. Ooh, a segue. No, I'm doing it again. A fork.
And
fork in the road.
To be clear, I am not necessarily an expert on the topic of medicine.
Mm-hmm.
However, one of my best friends is, in fact, a doctor who has at one point had his own practice and currently works.
You mentioned him. Can you con him into getting on the show?
It may be possible.
That would be awesome. What was his name? At least give him a shout out. So, or do you think that's not wise?
I'm gonna to
defer.
Hold that. Yeah.
Okay, we'll defer on the shout-out.
For a couple of reasons.
Okay,
but,
well, you'll tell me after.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So
secrets. Anyway,
he and I have talked on a number of occasions, and he's told me some stories, oddly HIPAA compliant stories, because he never identifies who it is.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But it. One of the things that drives me mad,
mm-hmm,
is how pathetic medicine is.
Oh, how disorganized medicine is.
Disorganized?
It's really disorganized. It's so bad.
You know, with technology, even when I don't know what the problem is,
right,
I kind of feel like if you talk to the right person, you can find out what the problem is.
Every time I go to the doctor's office, they murder a whole tree just to have a 5-minute conversation with me.
Well, there's that.
Right.
But it's kind of like, you know, don't we know enough, and clearly we don't.
Right.
But don't we know enough that we can program people? And I'm not talking about people's brains.
Go on. But now I like where this is going.
The DNA, your DNA.
You know, greenwashing,
gene editing. No, I'm not talking.
Okay, right.
I'm not talking that topic.
All right.
But using editing of one's genes or genetic engineering of sorts to identify and cure illnesses.
Mm-hmm.
It it bothers me because, among other things, in a technological world where we have so much data, mm-hmm. either it's not linked or you're not allowed to collect it.
Right. So you think the law is obstructionist in this case?
Yeah.
By the way, do you want any wine? I haven't even asked you. No.
I generally don't drink.
Okay. Sorry, this is making me want to drink because it's depressing. Yeah, you're right. They're totally disorganized. I mean, everything's disconnected. There's all kinds of obstacles. First of all, the one obstacle is their technical knowledge, the doctors yeah. and the people who work in the administrators who work in the doctor's office, who typically are trained, but they're not trained in the computer part of it. They don't understand computers well enough to do anything about it. And then, of course, then you have the entire industry and the insurance companies all about giving the least amount of information possible because the more information you have, the more you know how to game them. You know, and I'm not sure what you can do about any of that.
Well, even simpler things.
No.
Like.
Well, if we solve those problems, I think it would solve. I don't know. Would it?
If there could be a, whenever you have your blood work done, mm-hmm. if you could link a DNA sample to the blood work, mm-hmm. no names, keep the names out of it, mm-hmm. but you link the DNA sample to the blood work. And then you start matching up whether somebody has sickle cell or other high cholesterol. Mm-hmm. And ideally, you get an anonymous survey to go along with that mm-hmm. that begins to explain that if you look at the data properly, you can start seeing that, you know, these people have this kind of illness. Or with such surveys like, you know, does Advil work or Tylenol or Aleve?
So you're talking about like databases of prescription collisions, for example, or medication collisions.
Medication collisions, plus what works for you. Mm-hmm. Some people can take Aleve and, oh, that fixes my back.
Well, we're definitely headed there. You know, the database on what genetics, personalized diets based on genetics mm-hmm. is a thing. So there is at least one part of this. But, of course, it's kind of, it's funny that I brought up diets to start with, right?
It's not everywhere. It's just
right. It's just little dribs and drabs. It's not organized.
And if you stuck all this data together and started right. analyzing it,
it's almost like you worked at a genetics lab.
it seems to me like we'd have a lot more answers as to what drugs are effective for what people,
right?
You know, and what conditions,
right?
What genetic illnesses are caused? What people are predisposed to certain illnesses,
right?
As I understand it, there's a group of people who have a particular genetic sequence that are basically immune to HIV.
Yes, I think there's 15% of people of European descent are naturally immune to HIV.
Yeah.
They found it. I think they found it with this would be a good thing to look up. They found it with a prostitute in like in Bangladesh or something who had like had been exposed to HIV like over 100 times. This is how they originally found this mm-hmm. out. They said, why does this person not have AIDS? You know, why does this person not have HIV? So it's an underreported. It's not like it's on the nightly news every day, but this, I know. So I'll tell you this. I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but it's been a couple of years since I worked there at Rockefeller. They were doing trials for HIV immunity drugs. Mm-hmm. So I have no idea if they're effective or not. And of course, it doesn't mean it's a cure. It just might mean it's a vaccine. But they were doing it.
And I saw something.
I think it's public. So I'm 90% sure it's public. I'm really sorry. If it's not, but I think it was.
I saw something the other day, I don't remember where, but they were talking about, I believe, using HIV as a delivery mechanism for genetic editing.
Ah. Oh, okay.
Because HIV was so good at getting into the body.
Right, right.
And
what could possibly go wrong with that?
Well, I mean,
apparently HIV immunity started with the Black Death. The Black Death created a 10% immunity in HIV. It caused a mutation.
Oh, okay. So is it was I right? Is it Europeans or
it's European?
It's European. Okay.
Yeah.
So people with Black Death immunity also have HIV.
Well, no, it was caused by the Black Death. It was all I found out from that. And there's immunity. There's a mutation caused from that grants you immunity to HIV.
Oh, that's awesome. So if somehow you survive the Black Death and carry the genetic marker of that in your genes, or is it was a marker already there and then just so those are the people that survived?
I believe it was already there.
It was already there. Okay, so it's they're saying it's like an evolutionary thing.
Yeah.
Like the ones that survived were the ones that carry that gene. Okay, interesting. That's really so there's definitely good work happening in the HIV space.
But one of the problems with constructing such a database is that people have to be put into it.
They have to give permission.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Yeah. No. And that's perfect. That's a perfect way to cut into privacy. I mean, I think privacy's dead, man. I mean, at this point, for me, there's a thing. If you're not aware of it, there's David Brin's a science fiction writer, and he wrote this really great story, and eventually he wrote a book on it too, and called Transparent Society, about the idea that the cat's out of the bag. You cannot have privacy anymore. Mm-hmm. All you can do is lower our expectations and be less picky when people mess up. Expand friendship, so to speak, right? Where you have this kind of two-way street and reduce alliances, mm-hmm. where people have specific criteria, and if you don't meet it, you're in trouble. So I don't know if...
There was never any right to privacy.
Right. I don't think so either. Well, but I can say that definitively from a source, but I won't get it. It's too much of a...
I'm not saying that you don't deserve a right to privacy, but there was never any right to privacy.
Well, deserve. What does deserve have to do with it? We need to come up with a system that works.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't always need to be deserved. Sometimes... I mean, here's the problem with fair. Here's the problem with deserve. If life was fair, everything bad that ever happened to you would be your fault. I mm-hmm. just don't... Sure... It's a noble goal to try to get to that world, but I don't see a path forward where that's going to become acceptable enough that you can go to, it could be your go-to philosophy.
I believe in fairness as much as possible, but life isn't fair.
Life is not fair. No, it is not. And it makes me feel better that life's not fair, because when something bad happens to you, sometimes it's just not your fault. It's random.
Yeah.
It's just random, brutality happening in your life. So, I guess we are on the same page. Privacy's kind of a fake right. I think it just protects rich people, honestly. I think it really just protects the wealthy, and I'm kind of done with it. I still think that people can exercise their property rights, and you can have privacy on your property, but it's not really a privacy right, it's a property right. You can do the activity that you want to do on your... So there is a place you can go, right? And maybe we need to expand the ideas of property so that, cities will stop treating condos and co-ops, just as a really down-to-earth example, mm-hmm. as just a contract, and actually treat it as a temporary stay of property so that people can extend those privacy rights within it. But the privacy right is really just a property right. It's a renamed property right. I don't think that... But, hey, I'd like to hear if I'm wrong. Anything else you want to add to that? You're looking kind of fried, man. I'm feeling it, too. I think my brain fell down in my foot. My wife will be satisfied. Good job, Lee. Thanks a lot. Thanks for coming on. I appreciate it. And will you come on again?
Sure.
And talk to your doctor friend. I'd love to have him on. And if anybody has anyone they want to suggest, let me know. Thank you so much for watching. Check out my new cartoon, and I'll see you guys next week. Thank you. Lee Wilbur.